Forest Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is the mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. We got all kinds of interesting events going on this planet. So we're going to go around and we're going to look at some of them. And I'm going to answer because I got a gazillion emails about the Russian spy scandal. So we're going to pontificate on that. And let's start with going around the world and looking at our war. And I've kept you, tried to at least keep you abreast that there was a war coming. Babylon and Beyond. Let's go over some news events. Babylon and Beyond. Observation from Iraq, Iran, Israel, and the Arab world and beyond. This is Los Angeles Times. Iran controversial attempt to break Israeli blockade off Gaza called off. For some reason, Iranians called that off. Let's go over to Haaretz.com, and that's the Jewish newspaper. G8 fully believes Israel will attack Iran, says Italian Prime Minister. World leaders meet in Ontario for 2 days of talks, urge Iran to respect rule of law and hold transparent dialogue over its nuclear program. They most certainly will attack them. I think that's pretty much an easy call. When? I don't know. It's not if, but when. July 3rd, Middle East, Asian Times Online, Middle East section, July 3rd, 2010. Let's see here. By Viktor Kotsev. Interesting piece. Weather clears for a U.S. strike on Iran. They're talking about the time frame for a coming war is right here. War drums are beating in the Middle East in the short time the United States has increased its numbers of its carrier strike groups opposite Iran to 3, and the reports are raining down of a tightening ring of American and Israeli concentrations all around the Islamic Republic. On the diplomatic front, the Israelis are unusually concerned about their international image. For example, making concessions on Gaza. In Gaza, while the top officials, including Defense Minister Ehud Barak and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, are shuttling between Jerusalem and Washington. Everyone in the region is restless. Turkey is making spectacular diplomatic pirouettes. Egypt is quietly seething. And it goes on and talks about that there's a war and the war will not be that big of a deal. Interesting enough, Strat4 and all the intelligence services says the war won't be that big of a deal. This will be the biggest war the planet's ever seen. It'll have a rolling start that's already started rolling. But when the Green Goddess starts breathing fire all around, when the bullets start flying, it'll probably have a 72-hour hard start. And in other words, it'll start in the Middle East, and then it will encompass whole parts of the planet, or so they say. We'll have to see it to believe it, one of those type of things. But it's going to be huge. It's not going to be some easy war. And that's saying it's just an easy war is kind of what you see is what you get, brain dead to most people. I mean, you're pretty much brain dead to say that the Persians aren't going to get smacked, and to really to say that they're actually either way to say that they're not going to go out for them is insane, and saying go all out to nuke them or something is insane, and saying that Israel is not going to start a war is insane, and saying that Iran is helpless is insane. It's insane. But that's what they're talking, and it'll be big. I've been talking about this a long time, and this one's going to be huge. Huge, 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 huge. And what I've heard is that it'll have a 72-hour rolling start as the bullets start flying, and after 72 hours, it's going to encompass the whole entire planet, basically, or something crazy. World War III, basically. Let's see here. Iran moves radar to Syria. Iran has moved radar to Syria, and this is an AFP piece by put out by Breitbart. Iran moves radar to Syria. Interesting. Iran has moved radar to Syria that could provide early warning against a possible surprise Israeli air attack against Tehran's nuclear sites. Well, they're moving stuff around, and Hezbollah with its missile arsenals, and I expect the whole place to go up. We're going to do some movie stuff in this one, and one of the movies I'm going to talk about is Lord of the Rings, because it's an interesting movie, how white rabbits like that type of thing. It's all white, but one of the interesting things about J.R.R. Tolkien is what he referred to as a land of Mordor. And the land of Mordor, he always said it was the Middle East. I believe it, too. Interesting stuff. We'll go over that later. Let's see. Israeli leaders sued in Belgium for war crimes, June 25th. They are trumping up pressure all around on Team Pink Rabbit, whether it be in Israel, whether it be in London, whether it be in America. Team Pink Rabbit's getting trumped up. And, of course, bringing war crimes against Israeli leaders is pretty easy. It's pretty easy. Getting them on those charges and actually making them stick long term, well, that's become a challenge. I mean, everyone's tried to do it. No one's ever succeeded, really. Let's see here. Finland makes broadband a legal right. I've been asked what I think about them shutting down the internet because Taliban, which means elements around Taliban want to control the internet for 3 or 4 months. My understanding is what we think of as the internet, although it's fantastic, is there's a next generation internet coming out. And so it wouldn't surprise me that someone might do something like that or uses certain events as opportunities to shut down the internet. Because if you're going to have these huge events and you're going to make changes, I can't imagine doing it with an internet. And so it wouldn't surprise me that, I don't support that. Obviously, they should let it run. But, it wouldn't surprise me to see the internet shut down and a new one brought up. There is a whole new, and of course, the Pink Rabbits have theirs, which is tightly controlled, and they want everything taxed. And then there's another alternative. I'm interested in the other alternative. The next generation internets do not involve wires like we think of. The next generation energy sources and telecommunications do not involve wires. They don't involve telephone wires. They don't involve any type of conventional stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some short-term shutting down of the internet. It's nothing I'd want, but it's something that may happen. So if you want to listen to all my stuff, you might want to download it ahead of time. Doesn't mean I don't know. I don't know what all they're doing, but these events they got planned, that different groups have planned, are huge, and you're going to have to see it to believe it type of thing. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's some type of short-term shutdown of the internet, because the internet, as we know it, has become basically, it's fantastic, but it's become obsolete in certain ways, apparently. And there's a new one out, and that new one will be running even before the war, supposedly, and after the war. So if you see some razzle-dazzle or some type of technology you don't understand regarding communications, someone communicating with you in ways that you've never seen before, or anything after this war, well, you know that new internet is live, because the new one's supposed to be outrageous. And where is it running from? I believe it's running from Europe and some other places. But this is, I mean, if you do your homework, you're going to find out that there's a next generation internet. Both sides of the last two groups competing for a new world order are looking to roll out their next generation technology. And the side that the Jew rabbits would be on, we'll call it Team Pink Rabbit. And Team Pink Rabbit has theirs, and theirs is inferior, apparently. And the other side has theirs. I'm all interested in the other side, what they have planned for us. But that's my spiel on that. I can't imagine all this stuff going on and them not shutting down the internet or hitting something or hitting a switch or doing something stupid. Obama's already hated it, so using him to do something like that to change to a new internet would be, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. You know, the only thing... I hate to see it happen, of course, obviously. I'm communicating with you on the internet. At the same time, I realized, that's the way the world works, unfortunately. You're not in an ideal white rabbit world yet. It's kind of like that big oil spill down there. I know damn well that someone's going to use that as a problem, which got a reaction, and they're going to implement a solution. They're going to bring out next generation energy technology. That's not a bad thing for our race. And this next generation physics can be used to do all kinds of stuff and probably clean up that oil spill in a couple of days, for all I know. But that's a classic way to use a problem. It's too juicy for someone not to use it, so I will look for that. Now, as far as what they do with the internet, other than making changes, I don't know. I don't know how you make changes without taking something down. Why they wouldn't bring everyone in on it? Well, it's the reign of the red hippopotamus. He likes to stoke fear. He likes to stoke terror. He likes all that kind of stuff. And so that's what they're going to do. They're going to get you all upset, and they're going to stoke a lot of fear, and they're going to hit you with a lot of stuff at once, one after another. Some of it will be, I expect in the medium term to long term, if it would be great for our race. In the short term, there's going to be some adjustments to make. And we'll have to see. And we're going to move on because this is critical. I'm going to talk about the U.S., Russia. U.S.-Russia. They've issued something on June 24th. They've issued the joint report, the 2009-2010 results of the U.S.-Russia Presidential Commission. This is interesting. It's interesting because they finally now released all the different commissions that have been formed over the last since Talibama came into office. Since Talibama came into office, the U.S. and the Russians are now working together night and day, and they have commissions for everything. And these presidential commissions are working on all kinds of stuff. What are they working on? They're working on probably World War III and right after and all this different stuff that we've talked about. But this is what I wanted to see. I wanted to see us and the Russians working together in front of this war. That's what I wanted to see. And I wanted to see Germans somewhat getting involved. If something's going on with General Motors, you want to see the Germans pick up a phone and call Hillary and tell her to get on it. You know, you can't just leave the pensioners out in the cold. You can't just be doing stuff that Talibama wants to do, you know, basically. And Hillary, of course, is meeting with Lavrov, who is the head of the head of her counterpart in Russia, is meeting with Foreign Minister Lavrov and Secretary Clinton have been meeting nonstop. They've been meeting once a month over the past year. Every month they get together like a breakfast club. But and I'll go down through that because it's kind of critical for you to know about. I've talked about this relationship nonstop of what I wanted to see, and I knew they were meeting. I just didn't know how much because they didn't release a report until just recently, until just a couple weeks ago. And this will be up my Twitter. And so you really want to read it on how much we're working with the Russians over the past year, like overnight. July 2009, Foreign Minister Lavrov and Secretary Clinton met on the margins of ACEAN in Phuket, Thailand. And that's some kind of Asian deal. September 2009, Clinton and Lavrov attended the United Nations General Assembly and met. October 2009, Lavrov met with Secretary Clinton in Moscow. November 2009, Lavrov and Clinton meet at the inauguration of Afghan President Karzai. December 2009, Lavrov and Clinton met on the margins of the Convention on Climate Change in Copenhagen. January 2010, in London, Clinton and Lavrov met on the margins of Afghanistan Donor Conference. March 2010, following a meeting of Middle East peace process, Lavrov and Clinton met in Moscow again. March 2010, again, they met at the G8 in Gatineau, Canada. April 2010, Lavrov and Secretary Clinton met in Prague when President Obama and President Medvedev signed the new START treaty. And we're talking about all these different commissions. And, of course, they met again, and they were working at the Blair House. For those Americans that don't know what the Blair House is it's kind of like a presidential visitor's house. You know, when you come to Washington and you're foreign head of state, you generally stare at the Blair House. The Blair House is in Washington. You can look it up, and you're going to see all these pictures of Clinton. Now, Obama didn't really meet with the Russians at the Blair House. That was Hillary was there working out stuff with Lavrov and all these different interdepartmental steering committee and interagency participants. And I'll read some of those to you, but they're at the Blair House, and there's nice pictures of them at the Blair House working on stuff. The Taliban, of course, is the big black shooting star, and he's out getting cheeseburgers, which is what he's supposed to do. Everyone talks about him getting cheeseburgers, but no one talks about Hillary sitting at the Blair House, which is where foreign heads of state stay, and working out everything with Lavrov and all these different groups. And how many different working groups are there? Well, there's a policy steering group, which are dealing with Iran, North Korea, and nuclear. There's an Arms Control and International Security Working Group. They're working on cooperation on missile defense. There's a Nuclear Energy and Nuclear Security Working Group who have carried out initiatives to secure and eliminate nuclear materials and all kinds of other stuff. And that's just what we know about. I mean, this is just what we know about that they're doing. There's the Counterterrorism and Counter-Narcotics Working Groups who are doing that accordingly. They're the Military Cooperation Working Group. It's improving relations between our armed forces. Business Development and Economic Relations Working Group. And this is U.S. and Russia working together, meeting nonstop over the past year, all these different working groups, besides Hillary and Mr. Lavrov. Working groups on energy and science and technology have brought together government experts, academics. The health working group. We have environmental agriculture working group. You have emergency situations working groups. You have space cooperation working groups. Education, culture, and sports working groups. You have the civil society working group. And I'm going to put this up on my Twitter, and I want you guys to read this because you can see how much they're working together. Oh, these groups convened. Most of them have just convened September 2009, like the steering group and whatnot. They just convened. You got all the interagency participants. Most of them September 2009. I mean, it's just a tremendous number. Tremendous number of groups. And they're working together. Different elements are working together. Is this good or bad or you know, what's really going on? Well, anything we do with the Russians is going to ultimately be a good thing. In the short term, it's not necessarily good for the average American or average Russian because we got a lot of different stuff to do. But I wanted to talk about how much we're working with them because the spy scandals come up and there's some interesting things about it. And I don't look at it like normal people look at it, you know, evil Russian spies. None of them accused of spying, but there is some interesting things going on here, and we're going to talk about it. And I'm going to go over some news events and talk about it. Because you can only imagine how many emails I've got over this because I talk about our relationship with Russia. But that is up on my Twitter, and that is right from the State Department. This is U.S. Department of State Diplomacy in Action, Joint Report, 2009-2010, Results of U.S.-Russia Presidential Commission. And this was pretty much Hillary and Lavrov have been working together a long time. This was put together, by and large, last fall, which is interesting. But we're gonna keep on this conversation, and I'm going to keep going over the spy scandal and some different characters involved. As you know, the spy scandal erupted, a so-called spy scandal, and there's a lot of different questions being asked, a lot of different things going around on it, and I'm gonna go over some news reports on it, or talk about some news reports, and I'm gonna talk about a couple different incidental things. But the first thing we got to get down is you got to know a little bit about Russian terminology and their intelligence agencies. All their intelligence agencies were generally called the KGB at one time. The KGB was, was split up in these directorates. The first main directorate was in charge of spying abroad. It was pretty famous. That's now known as the SVR. Another one of the directorates was actually is now called the FSB. It's another KGB successor. FSB is comparable to our FBI, so the SVR would be comparable to our CIA. One of the more famous ones that you don't hear mentioned a lot is the GRU, G-R-U, the Russian acronym for Main Intelligence Directorate, which is a military intelligence. Most of you don't know a lot about the U.S. military intelligence, but the U.S. military intelligence is probably spying on the FBI, the CIA, and everything else right now. So we need to get that down a little bit. There's kind of like the SVR, which is abroad. There's the FSB, which is internal. And, of course, FSB's unwritten tasks include shadowing the opposition to the Kremlin, which is probably what they're doing. That's what the FBI does as well. They're shadowing opposition. To who what? To Team Pink Rabbit, and the White Rabbits in there are going nuts as well, you know. In groups like the FBI, there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. And you got Team Pink Rabbit, who in my opinion, they can be entrenched in certain elements of our agencies, especially the FBI, and they're always basically known as conservatives. They're not conservative at all, but they are Team Pink Rabbit, and Team Pink Rabbit, by and large, has taken over the top of conservatism. They're not trying to conserve anything. And they're some of the most dangerous elements to our race, but that is Team Pink Rabbit, and Team White Rabbit's there too. One morning I'm waiting for them to go at it inside these agencies like the Shia and the Sunni. That's how they'd go at it too. But in this particular Russian at the top of Russia, there's some interesting character. You know about Medvedev. You can find out about him. You know about Vladimir Putin, or we think we do. You can find out about it. The Grey Cardinal is probably the most interesting character because he generally upstages everything. If you know anything about British Petroleum, you know that Tony Hayward resigned and was replaced by German. Well, the Russians, I talked about in this my previous one, that the Russians got into it with British Petroleum, and British Petroleum lost. Anyone that went up against anyone against Russia or German soft power generally loses, and British Petroleum is now being run by German, which is interesting itself. But Igor Sekin, and he's a deputy prime minister. He's considered the Great Cardinal. He's a mystery character. I'll tell you a little bit about him, what we know. And what we know is that basically he's a mystery, but he's also very, very clever. Kartakovsky, those groups that got annihilated in Russia, all met Igor Sekin, and they all lost. Period. End of discussion. Kartakovsky's in jail forever, indefinitely. Because they may let him out the evening before Jesus comes the next morning and cuts all the Jews' heads off. That's the way these guys play. But he's considered a great cardinal. He's actually quite a conservative, by and large a Russian nationalist. And he announced that we know that Tony Hayward is leaving his position and he will introduce his successor. And so, of course, this piece gets labeled Russian feed speculation over BP CEO future. And this is right from Reuters. And, of course, the London spokesman for BP says, Tony Hayward remains chief executive officer. No change to that position is under discussion. They got upset at Igor for telling him that Hayward is leaving his position before they actually announced it. And, of course, Tony Hayward has since left his position, and this was on June 28th, has since left his position, has been replaced by German, who's speaking to the Americans now. And, of course, Germans speak to us like, they don't exactly aren't native English speakers. So he says, we care about the little people in America. And that's been a big deal on Fox News. They said little people, but they don't really know. You know, the average person in America doesn't really know how to say that any more than you'd know how to be in. The average person in America would know how to communicate to the Germans in German about their common phrases. But, of course, saying that little people makes him sound like a big, rich executive, which he is. But anyways, so Igor Sekin made some news there, announcing that BP apple cart was being upset at the top. The Haywards were leaving and being replaced, and, of course, he was replaced by a German. I can't remember the German's name, but he'll be talking to you more and more. He'll be talking all over America. And Igor Sekin is an interesting character, but he's typical what you're dealing with when you're dealing with Russians. He is probably one of maybe the most powerful white rabbit in the planet. Now, he's not the shooting star, he's not the Medvedevs, and he's not the Putins. You're not going to see him out talking to people, schmoozing at all this stuff, but he's considered a great cardinal. He oversees the oil, gas, and metals industries. I'm going to repeat that. He oversees all the oil, gas, and metal industries. In other words, he oversees those who oversee them. That's a lot of power, because it's the largest energy producer in the world, one of the largest metals producers in the world, period. So this guy has a great deal of power. But it's interesting because he's not that old. He was born, that we know of, at least the information coming from Russia, that he was born on September 7th, 1960. He's not that old. He's not that old. He's not even 50 years old, right? By my math, he's not even 50 years old. So it's pretty interesting. Or actually, he is 50 years old. He turns 50 this year, right? He's going to turn 50 this year. But these guys aren't that old. And he speaks Portuguese and French that we know of. And he met Putin in the 1990s on a trip to Brazil. And he's got all kinds of contacts. He works his contacts all over South America. And he's considered a Siloviki, or someone who has a great deal of power. His of course, claim to fame. He's been named time and time again by Mikhail Khodorkovsky as the man who masterminded the Kremlin's destruction of Yukos. And he is ruthless. Ruthless stuff, but not a lot is known about him. For the first 28 years of his life, when Putin came to power, he was always asked about, because this guy is the guy behind the scenes. He's considered the great cardinal. And so they said, you know, what does Mr. Sekin do in the first 28 years of his life are missing? Well, he's in the military. He's doing this and doing that. He's, you know, whatever. But that's emblematic of the planet today. We don't really know anything about our neighbors. We just think we do. But the Sekins of the world come out very quickly. And of course, Forbes ranked him as the 42nd most powerful person, more influential than Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. he's probably more influential than that. I mean, the type of control these guys have. But that's a good example of what you're dealing with in Russia. No one knows anything about these guys other than they've been extremely successful post Putin coming to power, especially when it comes to geopolitics. Some of these news events are very, very funny, some of these news reports. So I'm going to, you know, the Secretary of State and the Department of State released a very funny photo. It's Secretary Clinton with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and members of the Russian delegation. They're meeting at the Blair House. This is, all the time. All these different working groups, the steering committees and everything else. I guess we got a lot of work to do with the Russians. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But let's see here. Putin says, this is a funny one, Putin says Russia won't steal foreign technology. And he quotes, this is a funny quote, to steal a delicious piece of technology from an owner's table and consume it under the blanket. We don't have such a practice in the Russian Federation. It's kind of funny. They're talking about stealing technology in deep cover because we got all these spies running around, so-called spies. So let's read some pieces before I give you my take. Let's see, Russia, this is, Voice of America, Russian spy suspects did not act against U.S. interests. What the Russians are saying is that they're networking. They're considered illegals. Illegals mean they're, you know, right now in Russia, you're going to have several different spy handlers and spies and whatnot all attached to the embassy. And they basically can claim diplomatic immunity. Well, if you're a husband and wife team working in Russia and you were planted there 10 years ago by, you know, the CIA, you're considered illegal. You don't have diplomatic immunity. And then those are deep cover. And then they get activated sometime in the future to do some particular function. And, of course, what they're saying is that, and Russia's saying that they didn't, you're not charging with spying, which they're not, and they didn't react against the U.S. interest. And, for what I see about it, they didn't. It's kind of an interesting case, but let's keep reading these news events. Russian spy ring, snoops, methods, all cloak and dagger, high tech and old school. It's kind of a cool piece from New York Daily News, and it talks about all the basic stuff they're doing. This basic stuff has been around forever. Forever, many of these different things, different techniques, the tradecraft. It's the basics. They have a basics they go under. What's interesting about this case is that the basics were violated. Now, I'm going to get back to this, because you're not dealing with stupid fools here. And we're going to talk more about the basics being violated. So they have this particular tradecraft, and they're discussing that. And let's see, the Telegraph UK, spy kit bag, everything you need to be a real-life James Bond. Now, the real-life James Bond sounds rather sexy, but most of the stuff is... most stuff isn't sexy at all. It's just, it's just a bunch of legwork. And let's see, Wall Street Journal, spying as networking, and that's really what they were doing. You might recall that over in Europe, the Russians rolled Europe. I talked about these different networks that come in. And they would set up a network, a successful businessman would make business contacts, and they would create win-win situations. There's nothing illegal about it. There's nothing illegal about it at all. The Jews do it night and day. The Russians have been doing it like none other, because they're doing it with a gigantic state apparatus behind them and a serious asset. The SVR, the FSB, the GR, these are serious assets that they've deployed. And they basically flooded us, and I mean outright flooded us, in Europe and everywhere else with spies, but not necessarily spies in a conventional sense. The State Department has made a very controversial statement. Hillary Clinton's State Department said that they wouldn't have arrested them. The Justice Department was very upset about that. The Justice Department, the FBI, did arrest them, and the neocons are making hay about this. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Fascinating stuff. And what they were doing is basically the famous one that, of course, is the redhead. And I know what you all are thinking. Some of the male rabbits are wishing they would spy on their rabbit holes, because she's pretty good looking. Anna Chapman. And Anna Chapman was basically over here, and she built a successful business. 50 employees, or what looked to be a successful business, and she was making high-level contacts. There's nothing necessarily legal about that. What they're busting these guys for is like money laundering and all this other type of stuff. And we don't even know the whole story yet. Most of the first impression among the old school guys are that one or two of these fit the profile of a spy. But generally these all couldn't have been spies because spies don't talk. Don't talk to one another. There's no such thing as a network of spies. A network of spies is a violation of the basics. A network of a spy, of a U.S. spy in Russia, would be a husband and wife team. These illegals. It's very common to have a husband and wife team deep cover working in Russian industry, and they're spying on behalf of the CIA or something like that. It's very common. Very, very common. In any given time in America, it's always speculated there's 50 or 60 Russian husband and wife teams here. You won't know they're Russian, and they're spying on behalf of Russian in some capacity. Or being activated. It doesn't necessarily mean they're active just because they're here. They could be deep cover, plan it for something 7 years down the road or 20 years down the road, for all I know. But that is very common. It's controversial because it has been said that they don't yield much results. And when they get busted, it's always a pain because they can't yell diplomatic immunity or anything else. They're busted cold. They're illegals. You know, they're not supposed to be in. They're not registered agents. And so you're dealing with that. And the husband and wife team, the Murphys in Boston, are kind of interesting. They accuse Russian spies live perfect life, Boston lives. And their neighbor said there's no way they could be spies because she grew beautiful daffodils. You know, it's all this funny stuff. And who knows the whole story. But that is a typical type operation. It's controversial because some parties would say that they've never really worked out the way they were supposed to work out. They've never been able to glean the type of information. Of course, I don't know enough about the successes. All we know about the failures, you know, but the husband and wife teams. And then there's, of course, the ones that the Russians have deployed across Europe. That would be sort of like the Anna Chapmans or the very successful businesswomen, businessmen and businesswomen to make contacts. But that's not necessarily illegal. If that were illegal, they'd be arresting Jews right from Israel, right, left, and center for being over here on business networking. And there's a really interesting piece in Stratfor. Stratfor says the dismantling of a suspected Russian intelligence operation. And Stratfor will generally lay out the facts for you. They can't make any conclusions, but they'll at least lay out the facts for free for you. And that's the dismantling of a suspected Russian intelligence operation. And what it does show is interesting, alleged connections between the suspects and Moscow. So instead of reading legal documents, you just hit the image and see all the alleged connections. Well, there typically isn't any connection between spies. Like I said, you know, when you start talking about a group of spies, you're generally dealing with husband and wife. The idea that some of these different elements could actually have a connection or be connected is an anathema. It's against the basics. Yeah, you've never seen spies, a group of spies. It just doesn't work that way. And I'm going to come back to this. And what's even more interesting about this is that Russia plays down U.S. spy arrests. Clinton hopes Russia accepts U.S. missile defense and hopes this doesn't get in the way of it. And her husband has went out of the way. Bill Clinton has went out of the way, said that these spies were in the country a long time. The State Department doesn't want this to get in the way of a reset. U.S. downplays Russian spy case. This is Washington Post, and this is angering the neocons. They're downplaying everything at the State Department level. FBI breaks up alleged spy ring in deep cover, and then they're making a big deal out of it in The Guardian in the U.K., and of course, both sides are downplaying it, and elements in the so-called conservatives are trying to play it up. Russia wants access to alleged U.S. spy suspects arrested in the U.S. Former agent, only bad spies get caught. That's CNN. Well, not necessarily, but by and large, yes. Usually you're violating the basics to get caught. Russia, U.S., this is interesting. Global Security Newswire. Russia, U.S. seek to avoid tensions over spy probe. And there's basically, he's quoting, ought to reset our rosy view of Russia and remind us that Russia is not a trustworthy ally. That's Senator Christopher Bond, Missouri, ranking Republican. We have to deal with them, that there wasn't a great president who said trust but verify. And what they're trying to do is make a big deal out of the fact that we're resetting our relationships and there's been spies in America for decades on end, and somehow some of these got busted, so somehow that should ruin our whole relationship. Well, what we're going to do is I'm going to go, what do we know to be true here? And what we do know to be true is someone trying to create a problem. Someone's trying to create a problem that gets a classic reaction that allows them to implement a solution. Some people don't like the fact that Russia and the U.S. are getting very close. And all you have to do is go to the joint report just issued. We're getting very, very close with them. Some what you see is what you get. It's right in your face. It's running right down your throat, and some of it wide sky. But we're getting very, very close to them in front of this war. And this has something to do with German soft power, and there's certain groups that aren't going to like that. And those groups have tried to create a problem. Why would they arrest the spies now? Well, that's the big thing. If you go to Stratfor, everyone's asking that. Why not a year ago or 2 years ago? Or even, probably someone is panicking at the last minute. Someone's doing something. They're just trying to create a problem. Now, typically this type of problem, you arrest what is considered a network. Network of spies, pretty unheard of. You arrest some giant network, and the normal Russian reaction would be to throw out a bunch of embassy wonks that are actually spies for us in Russia, or a bunch of people. Let's say there's a bunch of people they're tailing. They basically throw them out of the country. That's a typical reaction. Then the other side reacts too, and they start escalating. And then they'll start throwing out State Department people in the Russian embassy, telling them to leave the country. You've seen that type of reaction your whole entire life. What Putin is saying is that we're not going to react to it at all. You know, they're just trying to, what Lavrov has said is conservative elements in the FBI and Justice Department. That's what he said. Conservative elements are playing around with Russian citizens. He's saying that some of them have done nothing wrong, and he may be right. He may be right. We're going to pontificate on that a little bit. But they're trying. That's what we know to be true here. They're just trying to evoke a reaction. It creates a problem. That problem gets a reaction, and that reaction allows them to implement a solution. They're trying to step in front. Groups at the last minute. These are not high-ranking groups, in my opinion. They're groups that are grabbing at straws, because once Hillary has met with the head of Russia for a year straight, once all these commissions get formed last September, you're over with. A group doesn't have their new world order, and now they're getting all pouty, and that's when they become dangerous. I talked to this before about the low-level pink rabbits. When they get sold out, they're going to start becoming dangerous and start doing crazy and neurotic stuff. Why they didn't do this a year ago, I have no idea. If you've been investigating them for 10 years, why not? Why now? I don't know. I have a feeling they got the rug pulled out from underneath them, and they have a blind spot, and they didn't really realize it until it's, a lot of times this type of thing, you don't realize it until it's too late. And when I talked about Russia, I went back from when Putin came to power. When Putin came to power, they went on the offense. And it's been an offense the likes of which no one's really ever seen geopolitically. They just stormed things. And German soft power, whether anyone admits it or not, is playing into that. Russia can't operate alone. Elements in the Anglosphere are playing into that. Team White Rabbit, we'll call them, not necessarily all perfect people, or necessarily people I like, or necessarily all, they're not interested in genociding our race. Let's put it to you that way. Putin may not be perfect. Igor II, they're Russian nationalists, but they're not going to try to genocide our race off the planet. They're not Team Pink Rabbit, let's just say that. And they've been on the full court press, on the move, in a way that anyone can observe, anyone can notice. All you have to do is go back over my MP3s, these podcasts, and I will over and over again give you news reports of Russia making big, big moves. And these meetings between our Secretary of State in the Blair House in Russia, and this reset that they're not letting anyone get in the way of, whether it be in the Justice Department or FBI, is a big move. Now, Mr. Lavrov's talked about these conservatives in the FBI, conservatives in America are trying to harm the reset in our relationship. Are these conservatives the same kind of conservatives that hired Hal Turner? Probably. Yeah, they're not conservatives. They're communists, basically. I call them second generation communist scientific racism. They're Team Pink Rabbit. They may look like the Lindsey Grahams. They may look like your mommy daddy's Republican, and they're more dangerous than anything. The world is upside down right now for white rabbits. And, of course, the Taliban the whole time is getting cheeseburgers. I mean, they're saying, well, we're not going to let anything get in front of our reset. That's good. But they're not reacting. They're not reacting at all, because that's what you should do. Yeah, you shouldn't go around throwing out people if you're trying to redo the relationship. They're taking it the approach, our enemy is taking the approach of, look at these stupid Russians. Well, the stupid Russians network themselves to a point where they can meet with Hillary for a year straight. All you got to do is go to my Twitter and look at the joint report. It's from the State Department. Read it yourself. It's right in front of your face. So they can't be all that stupid. But we are going to talk about violation of the basics, because this is what's fascinating to me. And really, one thing you get, you come to realize about the Russians, whether you like them or hate them, they're not perfect, but they're not dumb. They're not dumb at all. And so we're going to go over why would they violate the basics like that? Because that's what the big mystery is. And if you look at the Stratfor piece, one thing that becomes obvious to anyone with half a brain is that either this is all set up by the Justice Department, the FBI, that most of these people can't be spies, or that there's an actual network of spies. Spies don't operate in networks. Spies operate either solo or the new illegal method, the husband and wife team, the deep insertions. Anna Chapman, okay, fine. Successful businesswoman looked in the network. They did that all across Europe. We know that. That's what you see is what you get. The Vicky Palias, the Hispanic nationalist, kind of Hispanic nationalist writing some kind of big Hispanic newspaper within America. She's one of the writers criticizing America's policy on Cuba. That is kind of a typical Soviet Russian type setup. The Richard and Cynthia Murphys living in Boston, taking care of their flowers, the husband and wife team. Those are typical Russian setups. But what you were looking at Stratfor, when you look at the alleged connections between suspects in Moscow, it's huge. It's huge. They're using the Russian mission to the United Nations. That's, no one's ever heard of anything like that. And so there's a lot of people that think that there's no way that this could be all true, that we're missing something here. And if you go back into my podcast, I'm going to talk about Russia's offensive, that Russia went on the offense. And when you go on the offense, you expand your team, you expand your you expand everything, right? If you're a business and you're expanding, the first thing you do is hire a lot more employees, because you need more employees, you need more rabbits working for you. And so Russia went out on the offense. And I've talked extensively about that in German soft power, and how they operate. And Russia is pretty much what you see is what you get. They have objectives. And no one's really got the full deal on all their objectives, but they're, you know, it's coming to fruition into this war. And I'm sure we're going to realize that shortly thereafter, for better or worse. Now, under normal conditions, they would just do this and break America to the ground, and break Anglosphere, and keep breaking us to the ground. And as they break us to the ground, as they keep breaking us to the ground, they're going to take our gene pool and take our technology. Now, that's normal. The problem is, you're not in normal times. Normal times, there's no such thing as a network of spies. The SVR is not going to send out a network of spies. They might send out a lot of spies, but they ain't going to be in a damn network. It's kind of like a network of lone... There's no such thing as a network of cells. They don't operate like that. Cell is something independent. The husband and wife team, fine. The Anna Chapman's fine. The Hispanic lady writing for the newspaper, that's fine. But the fact that they're all connected somehow, there's all these connections, unheard of stuff going back and forth. And we're dealing with people that are smart enough to run the Aldrich Ames. To most people on this planet, they've never heard of Aldrich Ames. Americans have only vaguely heard of him. Aldrich Hazen Ames. He was born on 1941, May 26. He was a Central Intelligence Agency counterintelligence officer and analyst. And he was one of the most successful spies in the history of the world. Who did he spy for? He spied for Russia. He spied for Russia, and he caused problems. There are those that say he caused massive headaches for Team Pink Rabbit. I don't know. I don't sit here or there on that. I don't know a lot about the guy. I don't know. He married a Brazilian, and I don't know what that means. I don't know if she's a speckled brown rabbit or if she's a German living in Brazil. But anyways, he's an interesting character. He's in jail. He's one of the highest paid spies of all time that we know about, that we can find out about. And the reason I'm telling you this is not to impress you. Aldrich Ames is a spy. He was a spy against his own country, and he was devastating. He was just walking terror. He was walking terror, and that's the danger when you come into America. The danger when you come into America is you're going to have the Aldrich Ames. And some people say the Russians, you know, he fell into their lap. But you see, if someone like that falls into your lap, you've got to know what to do with them. You know, having something fall in your lap is one thing. Knowing what to do with it once it does is a whole other bill of goods. So really what you're telling me is that, one, the reason a lot of people believe it's all a big brouhaha is that the Russians don't violate the basics. You know, if you get caught as a spy, usually you're screwing something up. there's a basic protocol. It's very simple. In the United States, let me give you an example of this. And protocol really rarely changes. When it comes to invisible ink, no one can find out the recipe for the U.S. invisible ink, although it goes back to prior to World War I. The reason you never find it out is because it's still in use. Some parties still use it. Well, that you're dealing with tradecraft. The tradecraft for spies, just like kind of practical politics. 10,000 years from now, it's going to be the same. It's going to be a consistent message, right? That's a basic. And their tradecraft is similar in regards to it. It will never change. You might get some new technology, but by and large, they do very simple things over and over again. And Aldrich Ames was a master at doing simple things over and over again. But it's one of the nightmares of America. So when the Russians went on the offense, when they started expanding their roster, America already the FBI, which is who would be investigating counterintelligence within America, it's Russia's opposition group to the FSB. FBI is a big deal. The CIA doesn't monitor spies in-house. They're kind of a prod. The FBI would be tailing them or trying to find them. The FBI already has a full deck. In 1998, 2000, America's multicultural, multiracial. You got Muslims here, all kinds of Muslim terrorists walking around. You've got all kinds of different internal dissident groups. Why? You tried to destroy your founding gene pool. Team Pink Rabbit has tried to do the unthinkable. They've hidden this gene pool for century upon century, and they've tried to genocide us. They've tried to wipe us off the planet. When you try to wipe us off the planet, that creates a problem. That problem is going to get a reaction. That reaction could be white nationalists. That reaction could be Tim McVeigh. I don't approve of anything violent. The most devastating type of reaction is Aldrich Ames, someone that you pissed off. Because he tore them in half. And let's face it, there's a lot of CIA analysts that are very intelligent that are pissed off, and he was a disgruntled employee. He didn't go postal. He went postal CIA style, and he just pounded. I mean, all you have to do is look him up. He just left a trail of bodies. It did a lot of damage, a lot of damage. And so when you come into this and you come into what Russia's doing, going back in time, Team Putipoot, and they're going on the offensive, the FBI already has a full deck. At any given time, I've heard it estimated there's 50 husband and wife teams spying in America in deep cover in some capacity or another. Well, what happens if you triple that or quadruple that? Well, if you're looking to triple, if you're looking to flood the place with spies or even the Anna Chapmans to look to network, and report back to Russia certain information, the FBI is going to get wind of that. They're not completely stupid. Team Pink Rabbit isn't stupid. Team White Rabbit has to do its job. So they're not completely stupid. They're going to be looking in on you. So when you expand your roster, when you expand your business, you're going to have two problems. One, you're going to have to hire, you're going to get some bad apples. And two, you're going to have to, your competition is going to know about it. I mean, if Russia really starts going on the offensive, they're going to know about it. You flood America with spies, that's going to create a problem. That problem's going to get a reaction with the FBI. They're eventually going to find out about it. If you don't think they are, they're stupid. I mean, and Russia's not stupid. So what are they doing? What are they doing with all this? Why are they violating the basics? Why do they have a network of spies? Why are they all connected? Is the FBI that good, or is Russia that sloppy, or what are we missing? Well, I don't know for certain, other than elements in the FBI and the Justice Department are trying to create a problem, and that problem's not getting a reaction. That's what we know to be true. What I also know to be true is that the people that ran Aldrich Ames, and that's what Putin and company did, are not stupid. You can't be stupid and run something like that and be that successful at running a spies like that. You can't be stupid. You've got to be pretty clever. You know, if something falls in your lap, you've got to be able to use it point blank and run it down everyone's throat to deadly effect, and they can do that. So what's really going on here? Well, they flooded the West with spies. They flooded the West with these networking groups or different people, the Anna Chapman, successful businesswoman that networked her way up, and they activate them to find out certain information. What doesn't make sense to most people is that this particular group, they never really did a whole lot. They never really found out a whole lot of information, although Anna Chapman probably would have been successful at networking with some white male rabbits. But they never really, this particular group, the ones that quote-unquote got caught, what did they achieve? Well, they didn't really do anything. Spies tend to spy. You know, if you're not spying, you're probably not a spy. You know, maybe they haven't been activated, maybe they haven't been there that long. You know, and they're making it look like Russia's very dumb. But any time, you know, they're going to have to calculate that if you're going to flood America with spies, the FBI is going to get wind of that. That you're creating a problem. That problem is going to get a reaction. You're going to have to know that ahead of time. Some of the more successful speculators are saying that, you know, that a lot of these are dummies, doppelgangers. They're not really spies. You know, when you expand into your you expand your number of employees, you're going to get some bad apples. So some of these are known bad apples that they put out there. You're certainly not going to have a Russian mission to the United Nations helping spies. That doesn't make any sense. The FBI is going to pick up on that. And so this has become entertaining because you don't violate the basics. If you were to hear Bob Whitaker, if I were to hear that Bob Whitaker has threw the basics out the window, the average Inspector Gadget at the FBI might say, might become extremely arrogant, say, well, he's just stupid, he's just too old, he's just dumb. Well, that can happen. 2% of the time that can happen. 98% of the time when someone's ignoring the basics, you're missing something. It's because they're doing something else. It's because they're working a bigger scenario, you know. And that's what I would say in this particular instance. They've already got what they wanted. They've already networked all the way to the top. You know, if you're meeting with the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State is basically saying, we're going forward with a reset. We don't want this to damage our relations. If the State Department's upstaging the Justice Department, if the FBI is trying to do this stuff and can't get in the way, if they've been watching your guys for 10 years and don't have anything on these particular guys, my guess is they're watching the wrong guys. That would be common sense. Saying that your enemies, saying that the Russians are stupid, and I don't consider them my enemies, is stupid. That's naive. No one like these guys do not ignore the basics of their tradecraft. Sure, someone can get sloppy and get caught, and Anna Chapman can get fooled. She's a younger girl. Husband and wife teams get busted all the time. But having a network of them all talking, all using, I don't know. And having the FBI watch them for a decade and only be not even be able to charge them with espionage. I mean, they haven't even charged them with espionage. Charged them with money laundering, $5,000 or something like that. It's really ridiculous on all this stuff going on. And the Russians are saying they're just innocent Russian citizens. Some of them may be. But anytime you see someone smart violating the basics, sometimes it's because something bigger is going on. So that's what I would say. Who knows how many Russian spies are here? Who knows what they've got? They had to get a whole lot. Because you can pretty much get everything you want. I mean, the Chinese do it and they're Chinese. God knows what white people could do. Now traditionally the Russians do better off on putting in the spies like the Vicky Perlez and the Juan Lazeros, their husband and wife team, I don't even know how to pronounce it, the ones that write for the Hispanic newspaper. They do very well in that. They think Americans open up to that. But what they found out is that in a multiracial, multicultural nation, no one really trusts anybody, and the Richard Murphys and the Cynthia Murphys, the undercover lovers for Russia, they are extremely dangerous in America because no one suspects anything. I mean, Cynthia Murphy, her neighbors couldn't believe it. They said she grows perfect flowers. How could she be a spy for Russia? She's never really done anything illegal either. They're just busting them on minor stuff. They would be in jail for no more than a few years, but they're just trying to create problems. My guess is Russia has created huge problems for them inside America already and compromised everything already. For them to try to do something like this at the last date, not do it a year ago or 2 years ago, is just insane. Someone's had the rug pulled out from underneath them. And it's fascinating to speculate on this because you've seen the basics of be violated basically right in everyone's face. You have a network of spies. There's no such thing. You're not going to do that. When you say a network of spies, I assume you mean husband and wife. You know, Anna Chapman operated alone, but you know, Russian mission in the United Nations, they got to know that's going to get caught. They got to know the FBI is going to get onto that. You know, it's kind of like you got all these Inspector Gadgets at the FBI. You got Team Pink Rabbit running around. There are these, what Mr. Lavrov calls, conservative elements. And so these conservative elements have so much to do with hiring Hal Turners and investigating, you know, your granny that happens to wave a white power sign. And since they got so much to do, you just give them a little more to do. And since you're already expanding your balance sheet, well, you might as well expand it a little bit more and put in some doppelgangers and have all these stuff going on in America. And in this huge cacophony of noise, they're going to sit around and listen to the Anna Chapmans talk about buying buying Chanel purses and how she likes living in Russia. And she's busy networking. And they're going to be busy looking through the Richard Murphy's and Cynthia Murphy's underwear drawer. And they're going to be busy spying on all these so-called spies who really aren't up to anything. Up to anything impressive. But one thing it does take, it takes a lot of time, a lot of energy to spy on spies. It takes a lot of time, a lot of energy. But you have to know by doing stuff like this that you're going to get picked up. I mean, Putin's going to have to know, these guys are going to have to know that they're going to be onto this. Russian embassy employees meeting with Mr. Lozario, you know, it goes on and on. These groups are talking to each other. No one operates like that. And of course, the FBI says, they're stupid Russians. Well, maybe not. The story hasn't been written yet. But stupid Russians are sitting over at the Blair House working on all kinds of deals with Hillary. So they can't be that stupid. And the Russians aren't the one that's been over the barrel. I mean, the Russians are meeting within inside the United States. They haven't been over the barrel. They're not broke at all. So, I mean, who's stupid? I don't know. I don't know. I think a whole lot of my enemy. I never underestimate them, and never overestimate them. You got to know what their capabilities are. But anytime I see someone smart that knows the basics, violating the basics, you can say, well, they're being stupid. And maybe they are. Smart people can make mistakes. But generally, more times than not, something else is going on. If I heard Bob said, you don't need a consistent message in this case, or he's talking, in a language I never heard before, I'm going to assume there's something I'm missing. Because either he's gone insane, which is very low probability, but yet a probability, or I'm missing something. And there's something in this one we're missing. Either they're not all spies and someone's fooling around, or Russia's played a big, big game and taken someone to school. Russian and German soft power and elements within America. I'm going with the latter. I'm going with that these guys are that smart, because if you're going to flood the place with spies, if you're going to flood the place with networkers like the Anna Chapman, you're creating a problem. That problem's guaranteed a reaction, because that's a whole lot of personnel. It's a whole lot of personnel. If you were to double, if you're an employee, if you've got a business and you have competitors, all businesses have competitors, and you triple the number of employees because your business is increasing. And Team Russia's business increases every time they sell more oil. Self-reinforcing. But anytime you triple the number of employees, your competitors are going to take notice of that. I mean, they've got to take notice of it eventually. That's going to get a reaction. And you can prepare for that. You can prepare for that. And, I mean, if they want to sit around and watch white nationalists do nothing, wave signs, white power signs, which is not illegal, or groups that are concerned about illegal immigration and stuff like that, if they want to sit around and do all this stuff all day long and hire the Hal Turners, well, then elements of the, Team Pink Rabbit might as well sit around and watch the Russians do nothing. While certain other elements of the Russians do who knows what. Who knows what they've dragged out of this place? Normally this type of thing would scare me to death, because I would think the Russians are going to break this place in half, which is what they could do. Place is all but destroyed. It's ripe for Putin and company to come and just put their daggers through it. But thank God the Germans haven't surrendered that air base out west. Yeah, Hitler would roll in his sleeve if he knew the Luftwaffe had a big air base out west in America. It's where they train a lot of jet pilots out there. It's kind of funny. Until they surrender that base, we're not surrendering any land just yet. But it's pretty funny stuff. All this stuff about the Russians are dumb. Neocons are on one hand saying the Russians are dumb. Then they're upset that the State Department is saying that they're not going to let it harm the reset. And the State Department's upstate in the Justice Department, and that Hillary's meeting with the Russians. On one end, they're saying the Russians are stupid. And the other end, they're upset because the Russians, the stupid elements in America are meeting with stupid elements in Russia. And they don't have any power right now. They're in trouble. They have the power to cause a disaster in the Middle East, but, my race isn't living in the Middle East too much, so I can't really do anything about that other than do what I do with the soldiers and tell them, get out of the Middle East, because they're going to go to war over there. That's the only thing they can do, basically, is throw a big war. But the spy suspects and all the spy stuff is fascinating. It's fascinating because someone's violated the basics, and people that run the Aldrich Ames don't violate the basics. No, they don't violate the basics. One of these particular parties getting caught, the Anna Chapman's okay. Juan Lozario, okay. Cynthia Murphy, Richard Murphy. This happens all the time, all around the world. Spies make mistakes. What happens is they they usually at the point of contact is you're very vulnerable. If you're running any type of cell, you're most vulnerable at the point of contact. Whoever you're contacting, let's say you're two steely eyed lone wolfers are contacting each other, and you know about each other, but no one else knows about you. Your point of contact is where you're usually compromised. Your communications, and their communications in this case were very basics. Which is what you should always do. Keep it simple. But that's where you're compromised, because if you're not talking, well, no one knows anything. But they did things in a way where someone's going to very easily compromise you. Kind of like running to the Russian mission to the United Nations in New York. That's insane. Government officials talking to Anna Chapman. That's insane. You know, meeting for Anna Chapman to meet with a bunch of Russian immigrant groups in the UK. There's all kinds of them there. There's Russian immigrant groups all over the place, and they have meetings, they have balls, and everything else. There's nothing wrong with that. So the Irish, so is everyone else. But this type of thing, obviously, someone's going to be onto something. Having these groups connected to one another. Christopher Metzos connected to the Richard Murphys. All this crazy stuff going on. It looks insane. It's not typical. But you're not in typical times. And if you're not in typical times, you're not going to have typical methods. And it should be interesting to see how this one plays out. I'm guessing they all walk or something like that. And some of them may be what the Russians first said, and what they're still saying, and they may be right on some of them, is that they're just business people looking to do business. And by and large, you know, it's all they're basically doing. You know, when is networking spying? Well, I guess when you charge them with espionage. But it's a fine line. It's a fine line. But they're looking to meet influential people, and from the looks of it, certain Russian networks have done such that. Now, that, of course, those are the what you see is what you get networks. Those are the big networks attached to the Russian foreign ministry. and Hillary has a network. That's a formal network. But spies themselves don't operate networks. A lot of these times, these successful businessmen walking around Europe from Russia, are making contacts with independent, building relationships with certain businessmen. And they don't actually have big networks. In other words, in a what you see is what you get fashion. These Russian so-called spies had big networks. It just don't really operate like that. I'll keep your abreast of what I think about this, but it's fascinating stuff, because someone's violated the basics, and the FBI makes the immediate assumption that they violate the basics because they're stupid. I don't assume that, although it's possible in any one or two cases when you see something this crazy, and all else being equal, and everything going on with the State Department, Justice Department, there's more to this than meets the eye. And the people that run Aldrich Games, the people that have survived and brought back Russia, you can say a lot of things about them. And many things come to mind. Many words come to mind. Stupid ain't one of them. They're not stupid. But on to some other news events. I'm going to talk to you about another important event that may precede this big war. The Queen begins 9-day Canadian tour, and the Queen's going to make herself a big tour, and then she's going to give a historic UN address sometime over the next week or so. And this is on the weekend of July 4th, but sometime over the next week or so, she's going to make a huge historic UN address and appeal for world peace. And of course, we're going to be in the biggest war the world's ever seen, but that's the whole point. You know, everything's upside down. Two things in the Obama White House. Rahm Emanuel has come under heat, and I expect him to come under more heat. Look for that to happen. I don't know if Hillary's going to try to move out Obama. She may. She may, and she could do it. They didn't want her to move in, and she moved in. If someone moves in that you can't stop from moving in, well, they very well could move you out. Yeah, Obama didn't want Hillary there. It doesn't matter what you want. It matters what you get. Obama's there. He's a stoolie. He's there to eat cheeseburgers and to take the blame, my guess is. Yeah, Hillary could throw him out and probably throw Bill out and get a big Hail Hillary. But I don't know enough about Hillary and Bill other than they're political opportunists and whores. Bill much more so than Hillary. Not a lot is known by Hillary. She's a pretty straight shooter. Most people would assume she's pro-white genocide. Maybe she was. Maybe she isn't anymore. Under normal circumstances, I would assume the Russians are then setting them up next, are setting everything up inside America under normal circumstances. But we're not under normal circumstances when you see that many presidential committees meeting and all these joint reports issued on the U.S.-Russia presidential commissions from the White House, basically, from the State Department. It's a pretty big deal. So I would look for Rahm Emanuel, someone to put the kibosh on him, especially after this war. And I wouldn't be surprised if Talibama got hammered or got moved out or had to step aside or something. And basically, he's not doing anything anyways except pissing off America. Most Americans are pissed off. You can't even say anything to the contrary. I just stay on message. I don't argue with people. I stay on message because if you try to explain to them what's really going on, or if they, you know, some people ask me that. I tell that my audience that, but walking around every day, most people don't care. They're just seething mad. They think Obama's destroyed the country. And he did. He did visual. What you see is what you get. He hammered the place. He gets the blame for it. There's nothing. That's his job, is take the blame, so you might as well keep blaming him. Typical type stuff. I stay on a consistent message. My typical spiel when it comes to Africans. But they want to think that the president has all this power. He doesn't. He doesn't. You know, he's a shooting star. Shooting stars don't have all the power. It's usually the tail of the comet. And of course, in my opinion, Hillary likes this. They like having him out in front, sitting there taking the heat, eating the cheeseburgers, pissing off white America, which is always good for. I've been asked, do I think they're going to push through illegal immigration? If they wanted to push through the legalization of all these illegal Mexican immigrants and everything else, his golden time to push it through was when he had 60 in the Senate. You remember when he pushed through health care? He pushed health care down everyone's throat. You would have went with the immigration legislation then. Pushing on it now is an easy ploy because it ain't going to work. It ain't going anywhere, or so they say. Now he can try like hell. And basically, what the Democrats like it because the Republicans can't vote for it, and so they can say they're the party of the Latinos, and the Republicans ultimately will try to say they're the party of Latinos, but in reality they're the white party. And this is a mini political move. It's cynical because he doesn't plan on giving them citizenship. In fact, I don't think he likes Mexicans. It's also cynical because the Arizona governor is allowed to mouth off back and forth to him. It burns up a lot of political energy, but I don't see that passing at all. I don't think he wants it to pass. If you wanted it to pass, you would have passed it instead of health care. He could have easily shoved it down everyone's throat. He didn't even try. They didn't even mention it. So he's not really interested in legalizing Mexicans. That doesn't mean he won't try. That doesn't mean he won't give a big show. But in the end, it's just that, a show. It's just a bunch of conflict going on. It energizes the Democratic base. It makes Latinos want to vote for the Democratic base. But in reality, it's cynical. Because if he wanted to help them out, he would have, when he passed health care, he could have immediately thrown that in the mix. He could have immediately shoved it down the throat of the Senate. Now, of course, you have Democrats that ain't going to vote for that. So I don't know. In my opinion, it doesn't really, even if you legalize it, the whole place is collapsing. Yeah, you can't, there's people that can't even pay their parking tickets in Los Angeles. Why? Because the courts aren't open. Nothing's opening up. The only ones that obey the laws are white rabbits, and the law is now going broke. The law is bankrupt. And on the international front, Venezuela government nationalized 11 U.S.-owned oil rigs. Yeah, they nationalized 11 U.S.-owned oil rigs, and that is causing chaos, of course. Venezuela did that in South America. And so we got a lot going on inside America and a lot going on around the world. It's the end of an age, and these fools are going to war. And we have a big presidential commission meeting between the Russians and the U.S. At the State Department level. And the president's walking around eating cheeseburgers, which is what he should do. That's about all he's good at. We have all kinds of political machinations, whether it be the threat over illegal immigration or the threat over this or threat over that. Americans are very armed. Your enemy knows that. It means your allies would know that. Any type of conventional scenarios within America would never go because the citizenship is so well armed. But I don't know what they're going to use with this illegal immigration. I'm guessing they're going to, someone's going to use it. Someone's going to use it for something. That's what you can bank on after this war. But even if we were to make those Mexicans legal residents, most Americans are never going to consider them legal. That's the problem you come into. Under normal conditions, I would say that Russia would just break, Russia and Germans would break this place up, but you're not under normal conditions, so just hold tight. Hold tight, and I'll continue to try my best to entertain you. Entertain you as best I can. When do I think this war is going to break out? I don't know. Sometime after the Queen gives her address and the World Cup and everything's falling to pieces, so they're going to go soon, and they're going to use this to do all kinds of stuff afterwards. So if you want all these MP3s, I download them because the web might go down for a while. What all that means, I don't know, but you'll know it when it happens, and it'll be rather obvious afterwards that it's not business as usual. Do I think it'll be, do I think they're going to start rounding up white nationalists? I'm always asked about them rounding up white nationalists. Well, you're into the last hurrah of the Red Hippopotamus, so we could see all kinds of crazy stuff. And a group's in trouble. When you're in trouble, you tend to do stupid things. If you've had a lot of power and you're in a whole lot of trouble, you can do some really stupid things, kind of like this war. But typically, every time they've done stupid things, it's worked out. It's not helped them. It's not helped them. Especially, in fact, it goes back a long ways. Every time they make a move, someone gets a deeper and deeper hold onto them. You know, the big crocodile principle. Every time you move against a big saltwater crocodile, he grabs a better hold. He gets a better hold on you. Your first move may be your last if you don't make the correct move quickly first off the bat, and your enemy doesn't have a new world order. That's right in front of your face. Doesn't mean they can't do something crazy like go around and arrest white nationalists or conservatives or environmentalists. You know, all these groups are worried about the government arresting them in America. I swear to God. It's the most armed populace in the history of the world, and they're scared to death of everything. There is some legitimate reasons. I mean, we always had the government, FBI, spying on all kinds of different dissident groups. Why? It's their job. It's their job. And in Russia, they complain about the FSB spying on dissident groups. That's their job. It's their job. I mean, I can't do anything about the world we live in other than be on a consistent message and try to entertain you in the meantime. But I don't know how to predict that. I don't know how to predict what they do. Every time they've done something, things have become worse for them. And at this war and right after that, you're going to see that. You're going to see that. Someone's had the rug pulled out from underneath them, and it's just now seeping in, just now seeping down, because like we have blind spots, they have blind spots. So I don't really know. I've been asked to comment about things that I really have nothing to say about the Edgar Steele stuff. Apparently the white nationalists in North America are big on Edgar Steele. The Edgar Steele case is pretty controversial, I guess. I have nothing to say about it. When I have a list of potential leaders and leaders in the, or actually leaders of what you think of as white nationalism and conservatives and paleoconservatives, he's not on the list. He's not on my list. He would never be on my list because basically, if you listen to any of his speeches, he gave a handful of speeches at a handful of meetings for the listeners, and he writes a piece online called A Conspiracy Pen Pal. He's talked about the economy. He's a lawyer, pretty well spoken, and he's an elderly gentleman. He's in his 60s. But I don't know him personally. I don't know anything about him. But apparently, someone's accusing him of putting a bomb underneath his wife's car. He's going to kill his wife and mother-in-law. That's what they're accusing him of. And an FBI spy is accusing, an FBI informant got caught. They say he hired an FBI informant to put a bomb underneath his wife. His mother-in-law and wife's car to blow up on a certain date, and he hired an FBI informant. And the FBI informant went through with it and didn't tell the FBI. It's like a weird case. It's a total mess. You'd have to read about it, Edgar Steele. But again, I really have nothing to say about whether or not I think he did it or not. It's the wildest thing I've ever seen. FBI informants, the fact that they're, Mr. Steele, the fact that he's not considered a leader doesn't mean he couldn't be, and it doesn't mean the FBI certainly spied on all kinds of different people or had informants on all different kinds of people all over America, especially in the white nationalists that would never have any interest in being a leader or anything like that. But he's not on my list of leaders, so I don't know a lot about him. And he's always never really joined a group. He just pretty much did his own thing, wrote a book on racism. But I really have nothing to say other than, he's not on my list of leaders. Don't really know anything about him. If his wife gets on the stand and testifies that he did it, there's not much you can do. And that's the big thing in this one. You know, people are trying to speculate if he would do it. Well, I don't know anything about the guy. White rabbits can flip out and do all kinds of things. Anyone that's ever been married has probably thought about offing their spouse one way or another. I hate to say that, but I don't know. I just don't know. I have nothing to say in regards to speculating on all this stuff you guys asked me. Russia I'll go into. Russia is pretty fascinating because you're getting into someone breaking the basics. But I don't even know anything about Mr. Steele other than he's not on my list of leaders or potential leaders. He's never even, other than talking about running for governor, but even that he didn't do it. You know, he's just a guy that... He seems to be pretty much caught up on the Jews, which a lot of people are, and he likes writing about them, which, I mean, they're pretty much all up to no good, threatening his family and everything else, but I don't know how to speculate on something I can't talk intelligently about at all. I don't really have anything but the news reports, and it's a very weird case, I will tell you that much, and the truth will always come out. But you know what? You can't really, even if you're his buddy and you think he's been set up, you can't help him. Unless you really are out trying to help your race, because if someone's in jail for no reason, or someone goes to jail for no reason, the good news is the government's collapsing. And so you don't have to worry, the jails aren't going to operate. And that's happening right in front of your face. The bad news is, you know, a lot of these groups get all, it's very effective, when the FBI sends in one mole or whatever, because it makes everyone else paranoid. But all you can do is be on a consistent message. That's totally legal. That's the only thing you can do. And that's, you know, that's about it. And the sooner you're on a consistent message in your area, the easier things are going to get better at the top. And the easier things get better at the top, the more likely you are to get your buddy out of jail, especially if he's not guilty. But white rabbits can flip out. They can do crazy things. Old white rabbits can do crazy things. But I don't know him. I can't really say anything other than what I've just pontificated on. He's not on my list of leaders, so I don't really know anything about him. He's given a couple speeches, but do I think the FBI is capable of doing? Sure, elements in the government are capable of doing anything. If they're capable of sending someone to spy on someone like that, well, obviously they're capable of doing anything. Now, it's a very weird case. If his wife jumps up on the stand and testifies against him, well, that's going to be a little more difficult. I don't know what to say, though. You know, so because of that, I have nothing to say. So all you guys asking me about this stuff, I can only talk about what I know enough, like the Russians violating the basics or something like that. The internal machinations between these groups and different characters, and he's never even been in a group. And what the government or what Team Pink Rabbit may or may not do in its last days on this planet. Its last days, you're witnessing the fall of an old order. What they may or may not do as their underlings find out they've been sold out is impossible for me to predict. I don't know. I've never seen anything quite like it, though. You know, an FBI informant puts a bomb, as what they're saying, puts a bomb, takes money and puts a bomb underneath Mr. Steele's wife and mother-in-law because he wants to off them. And they got him on tape, or so they say. You know, it'll come out. It'll come out. The only thing that is crazy about it is that, you know, he's not on my list of potential of all the people that asked me about it, he's not one that's even on my list because he's basically never basically always presented himself as just an attorney to represent the Aryan nations because no one else would really represent him and is pretty much pontificated online. But other than that, that's about all I can say. But now in this next piece, we're going to go into the movies, and I'm going to talk about the movies. I'm going to talk about how I view movies. And how I view movies is not like most people view movies, and I'm not going to do a huge, huge media special because I could talk for hours about the media. I could talk about hours about the movies. But I'm going to go on some tangents. I'm going to talk about this movie and that movie and some stuff recently and some old stuff. Old to me, at least. And I'm going to talk about some of the greatest wide sky racist movies of all time. One in particular that is pretty mind-blowing, because it eats at the subconscious of the white rabbits. And I'm going to talk about this, and I don't know how long it's going to last. And I may do several of these because it's something I could talk hours on end about different movies and different concepts, and different concepts are hitting you with in various different ways. And some of it relates to World War II. And I don't know how long this is going to go, but we're going to start this, and it'll be entertaining for some of you. Probably more entertaining than some of my other stuff. But let's get going on this. The movie special. Act 1. The movies. Yeah, going to the movies is quite an event. It used to be a big, big event for white rabbits. But of course, as the movies become more and more toxic and more and more more and more pro-white genocide, it becomes a tougher time for white rabbits. We have to weed through this, what I call the unholy trinity of the red hippopotamus. Yeah, if you want to make a movie in Hollywood or anywhere else in the Western world, you gotta employ the unholy trinity. And the unholy trinity is usually diversity as a backdrop, at a minimum. And under diversity as a backdrop, as a minimum, you have the demonization of white males, always and ever. That's been well documented by the different racial websites. And you also have the demonization of the white female, or making them look stupid, or making them look like whores. But that all comes in to me. I put that all under diversity as a backdrop. And it is. And it also includes, you got to employ so many black actors, so many Hispanic actors, and all kinds of nonsense. But we got diversity as a backdrop, as one of the unholy trinity of the red hippopotamus out in Hollywood. And then we have, you have to have at least one interracial relationship. And that's part of the unholy trinity. Yeah, you got to have some kind of interracial something going on in there. And the third part of the unholy trinity is the gay rabbits. And usually you'll have a film that could be a decent film, but they'll mess it up with some kind of homoerotic something or other. I don't know why they do it. It's like they stick it in out of the left field sometimes, but some type of homoerotica. But those are the three what I call the unholy trinity of the red hippopotamus. You want to make a movie in Hollywood, you got to conform to the unholy trinity. Of late, there's some movies that have escaped, maybe one out of three or two out of three, which is good. I look forward to when they escape, three out of three. But usually what I do when I see a movie, and there's a lot of times you'll see a movie, and then a movie will be, this movie is 80% okay. It's just that 20% if I could change it. Of course, they don't give any white rabbits any breaks, do they? Well, we ain't running Hollywood just yet. Yeah, we run our own media online. It does quite well, too. But we're not running Hollywood just yet. Give us a chance. Give us a little chance, and we'll redo things. But in this next segment, I'm going to redo some movies. I'm going to talk about some movies I like and talk about some movies I've seen of late that were almost perfect if I could only redo them. And we're going to talk about what you see is what you get, racial topics in the media. I'm going to talk about some different topics I cover, some wild topics that they're putting into some movies, that they've shifted into a little bit. I'm going to talk about wide sky racial movies. I'm going to talk about the most famous wide sky racial movie of all times. It was very effective stuff on white rabbits. You can always make it more effective, of course. Nothing is too racially obvious to a white rabbit. Yeah, you could pretty much hit them over the head and they won't think it's racial. And that, of course, is racial, which is, a topic we've been on and off quite a while on this podcast. But the whole unholy trinity is something we can't get around. And the movie camera itself is a fascinating white rabbit invention. We have a long tradition of acting and drama and the Greek tragedists and the Greek dramatists and the different plays that have come out of Western civilization. The movie camera took things to an nth level. Having an animal that makes progress is a contradiction in nature. Yeah, white rabbits are the only rabbits that make real revolutionary progress. As old Bob says on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, white rabbits are the only thing capable of achieving civilization. And civilization is defined as something that rises to a higher and higher peak. We always do it. Usually everyone else just goes into stagnation or total decay once we leave. Once our influence leaves. But we raise new civilizations again and again to higher and higher peaks. And in this phase of Western civilization, we have raised our civilization to a higher peak, and we've used this new advanced form of media. And that's some white rabbit, I want to say is some British, the one that gets credit for inventing the movie camera, and there's several of them, was a white rabbit named something Green. Billy Green, we'll call him. And he is a long name, but he was a Brit, I believe. And there was a handful of others that get credit for different patents, whether it be the 60mm camera or this type of camera or that type of camera. But one of the Brits was the first to get the patent on it. And it's been a fascinating invention. Like all our inventions, it was hijacked. Yeah, I'm always astounded when white nationalist type rabbits, they'll say, Horace, why don't they bring out any of this new energy source or any of these new weapons? Well, usually when white rabbits bring out an invention willy-nilly like the media, like the movie camera, it doesn't go so well for us. We gotta really think things through, because usually our stuff gets hijacked by these little rabbits called the Jew rabbits. But the movie camera is a fascinating invention, because now you're taking inventing a camera itself is an abstract concept. You know, you got an animal that makes progress, so much so that it invents a product where it's going to take a picture of itself. Why? So it can look at itself. That's very odd. It's very odd. Animals don't do that type of thing. That type of behavior is very, very unique in the animal kingdom. But now you're going one step further. You're inventing a motion picture camera of some type, so you can take continuous pictures of white rabbits acting. And what are they acting like? Well, they're acting like other rabbits. That's a fascinating concept. Inventing a movie camera so we can watch ourselves acting not like ourselves. Yeah, it's not typical behavior you find in the animal kingdom. But no one else makes progress in the animal kingdom either. So this is a ball of contradictions. But this movie camera has been quite the invention. We can sit around all day, watch ourselves do all kinds of stuff, and watch ourselves interact with other animals, do all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's become a big craze. Right now on YouTube, you have all kinds of rabbits doing crazy stuff. Not just white rabbits either, because everyone else loves our inventions too. Everyone else is a YouTube celebrity. And this has become a fascinating thing, but abstract nonetheless. If you take our simple inventions that we take for granted, like the movie camera, it is an abstract concept. Watching yourself act is an abstract concept. For an animal to do that is incredibly bizarre, believe it or not. Other animals, of course, copy it. You know, monkeys copy other monkeys, that type of thing. But coming out with this off the wall, off the top of some white rabbit coming out with a movie camera as an invention off the top of his head is a very abstract concept. The camera itself is pretty much out there. But once you go into a motion picture camera, well, a movie camera, that's a whole another ball game. But it's been a fascinating invention. And as we go through these movies, you have to remember the unholy trinity of the red hippopotamus. Diversity as a backdrop. Interracial relationships. Gay rabbits. The unholy trinity. And we'll start this process. The type of programming we're seeing now on the Fox News, when you watch Glenn Beck's special on African-American founding fathers, or the type of programming you're seeing with the movie, the latest Clint Eastwood movie, Invictus. This type of programming that's extremely irritating for many paleo conservatives and white nationalists, especially the Glenn Becks, is actually the most ineffective on white rabbits these days. This type of programming that Glenn Beck's doing really appeals to maybe middle-class blacks. The Invictus appeals to the middle-class blacks. It doesn't actually appeal to the whites anymore. The Glenn Beck-style programming, if you've watched any of his series on American Founding Fathers, is true to the in the sense that the Founding Fathers weren't exactly hypo-ethnocentric Nazis. Yeah, they treated blacks pretty fairly. It's also true that they were heavily divided on issues like slavery. It's also true that they were, not interested in harming Africans. There's no doubt about that. And of course, what he's doing is going out of his way to say that they were trying to make a multicultural, multiracial country in America from day one. Now, this slant that he has on things, you know, that America, you know, it was always multicultural, multiracial, and the Founding Fathers want it that way. Now, that's disingenuous. But the way he slants it is very effective for middle-class blacks. It would have been outright dangerous for our race in the 50s. Let's say that after World War II, they wouldn't have squared up and tried to kill white rabbits. They were to just leave blacks alone or put them in their own territory and create kind of like Singapore's and Dubai's in some big city areas, and then start that Glenn Beck style programming. But to be honest with you, it would have been a lot more dangerous for our race than what they did. I mean, what they did, they got a lot of white rabbits raped, killed, and murdered. They built up blacks into superheroes, but that's not the way you want to do it. What they did was the exact opposite of what you'd want to do. But this Glenn Beck style programming that they're doing now is way too late. The white rabbits that watch it are not saying what they would have said in the 50s or the 60s, this type of programming. What the white rabbits are saying now, if they're not outright irritated by it, is they're saying, well, okay, we've treated them nice, and what he's saying is the Founding Fathers treated them nice. Then why are they always running around, upset all the time, destroying everything, murdering, raping, and killing? You see, that's the problem. That's the general problem with this style of programming. It's so over, it's too late for that. But it is, excuse me, it is a more dangerous type of programming than the Invictus. Invictus is getting, the Invictus stuff is getting old. You know, diversity as a backdrop are upside-down stereotypes. Glenn Beck is not necessarily doing an upside-down stereotype. He's doing a lot of propaganda with a clever slide. It is true that the Founding Fathers weren't this mean, racist group of people. They weren't ethnocentric. A lot of them weren't at all. But it's also disingenuous to say they were founding a white country. It's kind of funny. And they're doing the slant on things. But this diversity as a backdrop, what I'm referring to, one of the unholy trinities of the Red Hippopotamus, is basically flipping upside down stereotypes. Stereotypes are by and large true. Yeah. Detroit is basically wrecked by African rabbits. That's basically true. They're not good at running cities or governments. They tend not to be, at least. Especially in Western civilization. Now, they may be able to run, an African may be able to run an African country in an African way, but he certainly can't run it for Europeans. This is just, he can't run Western civilization. That's kind of obvious to everyone. But flipping it upside down in somewhere like Invictus and saying everything's okay, we can all love each other and get along, you know, that's the typical type of thing you've seen your whole entire life. Nelson Invictus is a movie by Clint Eastwood that Nelson Mandela and the rugby team is an integrated rugby team and everything works out. There's been tons of movies like this. But the problem with it is when anyone, white rabbits tend to be curious and they'll Google South Africa, they may not find what they want. But the typical upside down or diversity as a backdrop or upside down stereotypes is what you see in basically Independence Day. It's a movie about an alien invasion of Earth, and the people that save the day is one Jew and one black rabbit. Yeah, the black rabbit is a military pilot who pilots a alien craft back and destroys a ship, and a Jew rabbit is a computer genius and he helps them. But that is typical. That is typical, complete opposite of what we see in society. And Invictus, of course, is in complete opposite of what's going on in South Africa. But the Glenn Beck style programming, this African Founding Fathers, is a lot more dangerous. It isn't now because everything's destroyed. It isn't now because they're not going to ask, the white rabbits are not ever sitting still. They're not going to ask the same questions now that they're asking in 1950. Using guilt over the Holocaust or over Hitler in 1950s, and then invoking this style of programming instead of going to such extremes would have been a lot more dangerous. What they did was they went to extremes. I mean, and that's what it takes. To awaken a white rabbit, you've got to go to extremes. Why we even use this term awakening, in the white nationalists or paleoconservatives, is you have to awaken. Awaken from what? Well, awaken from the fact that we're not racial and that is racial. In the beginning of the next podcast, I'm going to go into this more. Because a lot of us think that that the Jew rabbits do all this stuff, that they wave magic wands and they put us to sleep. But the fact of the matter is we're never really awakened to begin with. It doesn't matter whether it's American founding fathers. It doesn't matter if you go back 4,000 years. That was the biggest problem for me walking into this. I assumed that we were something that we never were. Yeah, there's only one in any group of 50 or even some would say one in 100 that'll stand up for their ethnic interests. But by and large, Europeans are not ethnocentric at all. To be ethnocentric, you have to pretty much have a pink rabbit, a black rabbit, Mexican rabbit, and anything else wail on you for a half century and try to and with the pink rabbit banksters and leechers trying to wipe you off the planet. Then after going through all that, then you get a little upset. You know, the Scots had to go get wailed on by the English for a few centuries to get a William Wallace. We've went into this before. We have extreme tolerance, extreme threshold for abuse and punishment for one simple reason. We're extremely nice. And I will go into that in the beginning of the next podcast in a lot greater detail. But this ideal that we are something that we never were, these hyper-ethnocentric... we were these hyper-ethnocentric white rabbits that someone waved a wand over and put us to sleep. No, you can demoralize. Demoralizing us in regards to race, in my opinion, was the easiest thing in the world. You know, demoralizing white rabbits with the media in regards to race is pretty easy because we're not racial to begin with. But anyways, let's move on this discussion on the movies, and I'm going to come back over some of these topics. And this is going to be act one for the movies. And we may have several different acts for these movies because there's so many different areas to go into. All these topics I've covered, many of them, even the ones that are far out there, have been covered in the movies. In the next podcast, I may go into it and start including more and more stuff in the media that they're putting in front of you. Different concepts that came out in the Harry Potter movies and stuff like that. But by and large... most of the type of media in regards to the upside down stereotypes or the unholy trinity, the stuff over diversity as a backdrop will not work the way they think it's worked. I mean, it's not been as effective as they thought it would be. If you go to the Jew rabbits or the media titans, they will openly say that we don't have it quite perfected yet. Well, they don't have what perfected. Yeah, they don't have this perfectly blended society yet, and they don't have a media that's producing it yet. They're trying their pro-white genocide media, and it works to some extent, but by the time it starts working, we start having a reaction to it. And it comes back into this topic of negative conditioning. It's a very... I went into it before, but by the time you really go over the top with it, they're not going to see things the same way. They're not going to watch Glenn Beck and see things the same way. The fact that the Glenn Beck African American series is irritating so many conservatives and white nationalists, that should tell you something. They're just creating a problem and getting a reaction. They're not getting the reaction they want. Now black middle class rabbits watching that will say, okay, alright, America was a very nice place to begin with and they got screwed up a little bit with the Ku Klux Klan. But they're not gonna do that. When you're noticing all the interracial marriages and stuff like that in the movies, after a while, it's not going to get the reaction they think. At first they'll kind of ignore it and then it'll become too over the top. A handful will buy into it, 20% or whatever that's interested in it. And then there's going to be that big core group that rejects it outright because we negative condition. You know, we'll believe anything for a while and then we'll do a 180 on you. That is the essence of white rabbit. You can go back and listen to negative conditioning. I think it was 15 or 16 where I covered that. And of course the gay rabbit stuff, everyone's noticed all the gay rabbit stuff. But let's move into these movies and how they mess up good movies. One good movie, which I thought could have been a great Western, was another Clint Eastwood flick, Unforgiven. Unforgiven could have been an epic Western. I mean, it had Gene Hackman, it had classic lines. But of course, they mess it up. They mess it up by throwing in Morgan Freeman as a black cowboy, and, it's just a great example of how you can take a movie that could be great and screw it up. Now, Clint Eastwood, for the record, is pro-white genocide. yeah, I think he's married to a Mexican and he adopts little black kids and all that kind of stuff. I don't know that he maybe he's one of the 20% that just likes diversity, but by and large, he's in the enemy's camp. When you see these Hollywood actors do this stuff, you know, adopt all these little, have these little multiracial make-believe families. And it's pretty easy to do when you're rich, but have all these little multiracial make-believe families. They're all obviously in the enemy's camp, and he's one of the first to really do that, I believe. But he's always putting this stuff in his movies. And Unforgiven was a movie that could have been great if it wasn't for his messing it up and putting diversity in somewhere where it doesn't belong, like a black cowboy married to an Indian out west. I mean, I'm guessing there were a couple out there in the old west, but it just doesn't belong there. They're always doing something and putting something out of place, moving something back into place, making Gene Hackman the mean old sheriff to kill the poor black rabbit. You know, you would have to see the movie, I guess, if you haven't seen it. It's a potentially epic western, really cool western that they messed up. Diversity can mess up a film. You know, especially when it starts tweaking stuff too hard. You know, Unforgiven wasn't as tweaked regarding diversity as a backdrop as, say, Independence Day, the alien invasion film, where we have, you know, another black man who's a hero and a Jew save the world. That is completely upside down. It's not upside down to have a black cowboy. It's just they go out of their way to stick this stuff in places where it would have been perfect without it. Another great movie, which I thought could have been one of the best movies by Guy Ritchie, is Rock and Rolla. Rock and Rolla is like this, the UK gangster film, and it's organized crime, different organized crime figures, and they cover the Holy Trinity of the Red Hippopotamus. They got diversity as a backdrop. Not as much as some other films. They don't have everything completely upside down. It's not as bad as Independence Day, but it's a film that could have been epic. It's a great example of, if you've seen the film, it could have been perfect, but they threw in this homoerotic stuff. They threw in the gay rabbit out of nowhere. It doesn't even belong there, but they threw it in there. The interracial relationship, and you know, having one of the black rabbits as a smart thief, well, you can let some of that slide because we're kind of immune to that after a while. I mean, it's not like we're writing the scripts. But it's a great example of a movie that if you just tweak it a little, we could make it perfect. Take out the gay rabbits. Take out all this homoerotic stuff. And by the way, it's totally out of nowhere. It's totally out of nowhere in the movie. It doesn't do the movie any, it doesn't even make sense in the movie, really. Take that out of there. Take out the interracial rabbits and you could actually have a cool movie. A really, really cool movie. But Rock and Roll is one, probably the best Guy Ritchie script maybe maybe one of the best scripts he's ever written that could have been epic. And he's done some other films that are really good, like Scratch. But this film had a really good plot and everything else, but it's a great example of the unholy trinity of the Red Hippopotamus and how it screws up a movie that could be good. Now, some of the conservatives that listen to this podcast may not like this type of film, but I think the film is really, really cool. I mean, it's a great script, but they throw stuff in there that doesn't make sense. And it's got this other woman in there. She's like a little speckly brown rabbit. I think her name's Thandi Newton. I don't know what she is. She's a great example, one of those exotic rabbits that London is producing all of a sudden. I don't know what she is, Thandi Newton. I don't know if she's Asian, black, all the above, white, yellow, pink. I don't know what she is. She's an exotic rabbit. But she's in there, and she's involved in one of the relationships. She's married to a gay guy. It's a movie that could have been perfect had it not been screwed up by the Red Hippopotamus. But to be honest with Guy Ritchie, even if Guy Ritchie was a virulent racist, you want to get a movie made, you're going to have to do things like this. You're going to have to do things like this. And that's the tragedy of the situation. But the diversity as a backdrop, and the interracial stuff just throwing in there out of place, and the gay rabbit stuff just coming in out of nowhere, is a great way to mess up that what could be a stellar script. One movie though that I think was probably one of the best movies I've seen in a long, long time, at least for my taste. And In Bruges is a movie that is a black comedy film. It's written by Martin McDonagh. And The film stars Colin Farrell and Glenda Gleason and Ralph Fiennes, and it is a, you know, it's a movie that is, for modern times, it's about perfect. Now it's got a lot of swearing in it, and some of the, it depends on what your taste in movies is, but it's about two hitmen who have to escape London, and they go to Bruges, Belgium, and they're walking around there, and they get into all kinds of scuffs and whatnot, and they accidentally kill a little boy when they're killing a priest. You just have to see the thing. It sounds a little out there, but as far as modern movies go, it is pretty good. It is pretty good from a racial perspective. It's a lot better than most others. It was a lot more tolerable, but it had some themes in it that were pretty funny and pretty cool. And it's a great example of stereotypes at work in our favor. And it has, of course, it has one interracial marriage or something like that alluded to. Yeah, you got the red hippo in there. It doesn't have a lot of diversity as a backdrop, but one of the hookers in it is it looks like to be multiracial. Let me think what else. It has the two funny stereotypes that work in our favors is one, that skinheads are stupid and weak. In other words, racialists are stupid and weak. I think that's always working in our favor. The second stereotype it has is when this midget, which is one of the funniest parts of the movie, this midget is talking about race war and all the blacks and whites are going to go at it in America. And Colin Farrell says he'd be on the black side because the whites would all get creamed and everything else. Now, this type of stereotype also works in our favor because it builds up an enemy that is pretty much wouldn't have a chance beyond the first 72 hours because they're not good planning. They're not good at planning. And there's too many guns against it. So, I mean, it's just full of stereotypes that work to our advantage. It also shows one of the funniest parts of the movie is when it shows Americans that are very overweight. And it kind of makes fun of them. And there's a stereotype around the world about Americans being overweight. And of course, when the Anglo elites bring in their culture, a lot of times it'll make another country overweight too. The Chinese are complaining about this. Many other cultures that take on American fast food and whatnot. Personally, I think it's something they put in the, I think it's chemicals some of the Anglo elites put in the food or something. But it doesn't matter whether it's UK or Ireland or even Australia. Everyone complains about the obesity epidemic caused by something. They don't know what's causing the obesity epidemic, you know, even in China. But anyways, you can see the film for yourself. There are plenty of Americans that aren't fat, but by and large, there's a lot of obesity on the planet right now. Yeah, it's a global theme. There are many societies complaining about obesity. Believe it or not, even some African societies are, and they don't know what's causing it all. I think it's personally something they're putting in the air or something. Who knows? But even the Mexicans, the fattest Americans right now are not white Americans, in my opinion, are Mexicans. But that's a stereotype they won't show on TV. And that would be true. And I don't live in California. I've never lived in California. Last time I was there, I don't remember seeing any fat Mexicans. But all the Mexicans that I see around where I'm at, and they're by no means an epic number, are huge. In fact, a lot of the black rabbits I see in these areas are huge. Huge, 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 huge. The fattest rabbits I've ever seen are Mexicans these days. I don't know. It seems like whatever they're putting in the food to make the white rabbits fat, it makes everyone even fatter. But anyways, that's a stereotype in there, and I don't think it's necessarily to our disadvantage because it is somewhat true. But it has some funny stereotypes in there that work to our advantage. The reason black rabbits couldn't do very well after the first few days with a lot of help and, one, no foreign nation would really help them. The only hope they would have is if someone like Russia stepped in and tried to help them, but even that would be difficult. And two, they're not good at planning. Even their military generals and whatnot are not good. But it's just thinking there could be a race war and Africans could survive in America is kind of a joke. They do some damage in the first week, but that's about it. Most of the major cities would be shut down and Obama would be the first to do it and he'd shut off the water and Obama would be the first to do it and they'd all drop drop dead very quickly. They're not good at planning. But anyways, you'd have to see the film. It's one of my favorite films of late, In Bruges. And that's Inbruges. You will either love it or hate it, but if you like Hitman-style movies, it's pretty damn funny. It's pretty damn funny. And as far as modern movies go, where we can't buy a good movie, having some white guys run around, it's pretty funny dialogue. And the American midget, one of the funny scenes is when Colin Farrell asks the American midget if the white midgets and the black midgets are going to go at it in the American race war. It's kind of funny. You'd have to see it. You'd have to see it and then see what you think about it. But that's a good example of stereotypes that work in our favor. White racial thinkers are stupid and weak, and blacks are these wonderful, intelligent, or more importantly, these dynamic figures that can win anything. That's not good for black rabbits because it's not based in reality. But let's move on here. We're going to move on here, and I'm going to talk about some other films, some devastating stuff that's come down the pipeline, some racial movies that are what you see is what you get in Wide Sky, but not in the way we may think upon first glance. Some of the most dangerous movies out there, The District Nines, The Black Hawk Downs, The Blood Diamonds. These movies dehumanize Africans, make race very real, without making anyone uncomfortable, so they'll walk away, so white rabbits will sit there and watch it. It's extremely subversive. There's another kind that I would consider even more subversive, but I consider The Black Hawk Downs, The Blood Diamonds, The District Nine, what you see is what you get racist. Because what they do is they show African behavior. In this case, African behavior, whether it be in Africa and Black Hawk Down, you know, the movie drew heavy, heavy fire. Black Hawk Down is based on a real story of Black Hawk going down in Somalia. And the film drew heavy fire for casting Africans Americans who neither look or sound like Somalis to portray them as ignorant, extra dark, scary, bloodthirsty mob of villains with no legitimate cause to attack U.S. Army Rangers. Well, and that's how it's listed on one of the most racist movies of all time. And I would have to agree with you, it's extremely subversive. Sometimes the truth is the most subversive thing in the world, and putting it over and over again in front of them, because many white Americans, or many even in Europe especially, because they're attracting a lower class of African from Africa, have seen Africans flip out and act crazy. Maybe you're in France listening to this and you've seen them burn down cars. What it's doing is reinforcing the obvious, but doing it in a very truthful way. That isn't necessarily any name calling. It's not anything that can. It's not anything that most white rabbits even realize what they're watching. It just eats at their subconscious, and that is extremely extremely good, and at the same time subversive. I think a lot of parties wouldn't make these movies if they get away from it. District 9 did something extremely dangerous. It took race out of the human family and put it into an alien family. And yet at the same time brought black rabbits along with it. The prawns were described in District 9, of course, as they sound just like black rabbits. And this is an extremely, extremely, I consider what you see is what you get, because it had black rabbits in it too. But I'm going to get to one of the most Wide Sky racist movies of all time, in my opinion. Blood Diamond did something as well. Blood Diamond has a scene in the movie which is pretty wild. It has Leonardo DiCaprio and some famous African actor, and there's one scene in the movie in Blood Diamond. It's, of course, about stealing diamonds and smuggling diamonds out of Africa. And one of the parts in the movie is extremely good, is when the African looks at Leonardo DiCaprio and he says the old African wise men say there's something in our skin that makes us no good. And it's almost sad. Black Hawk Down, Blood Diamond make white rabbits feel sad, and they make them come to the realization. If you've had exposure to them at any time at all, any sense at all, or any amount of time at all, like in America or in Europe these days, that they are hopeless. And the next stage beyond hopeless is, of course, useless. And that's a dangerous thing for white rabbits to start concluding. It's kind of like, you know, we got a problem with these black bears in New Jersey, and the black bears in New Jersey are now hopeless, and they're overpopulated. And right next to that is useless. It's a very dangerous thing to go through because white rabbits will go into, management mode, black rabbit management mode. And this type of programming slips underneath the radar. And most white rabbits don't realize what they're watching, but it eats at their subconscious. It eats at the stuff in District 9 will eat at your subconscious. And many of the racialists, many of the white nationalists are starting to see some stuff like this, these undercurrents, these themes. And it is extremely, extremely subversive. One movie in itself isn't, but there's a whole thread of them, and I could sit here all day talking about them. But the Black Hawk Downs, the Blood Diamonds, the District Nines are all what I call what you see is what you get racial. They show the truth. They're not, you know, what most of the white nationalists would want something on horrific crimes in South Africa. You can do that, but it's going to get a lot of people turning away. You have to bring them to that point under their own accord. Let them do their own research. You gotta set out ladders for them to climb up on. And these movies are like little ladders for them to climb up on. You know, white rabbits are not racial, and that is racial. They have to awaken. But programming this stuff over and over again is extremely what I consider the art of subversion. But it is something that basically is just talking about the truth over and over again, not in ways that are confrontational or in ways that most white rabbits watching it will even understand what's going on inside them until one day things start clicking. But that's what I think about what you see is what you get racial movies, the Black Hawk Downs, the Blood Diamonds, the District Nines. They're very interesting. They're not going to be up to par to your average paleoconservative because they want things their way. Well, their way is not necessarily mainstream. Their way is not necessarily in tune with popular culture. I still remember all the conservatives trying to come over to popular culture by hiring rappers. Well, that's not exactly how you do it, and most paleoconservatives realize that. But they're basically way out of tune with popular culture, and that's how subversion works. You walk into some popular culture theme and you start subverting it slowly but surely. But thinking that you're going to just put a bunch of images out of South Africa in front of white rabbits and immediately get the reaction that you're looking for or get them to beam with your cause, it will not work that way. You have to set out ladders for them. The Black Hawk Downs, the Blood Diamonds, the District Nines are dangerous ladders. And some parties know that. Some parties know that. The greatest wide sky racial movie of all time. And you know, you could talk about a birth of a nation. A birth of a nation would be what you see is what you get, over the top, over a brilliant propaganda, actually a great film, a lot of truth to it. And this type of thing maybe a paleoconservative would like. But different groups of whites are going to react to stuff different ways at different times based on the current trends in popular culture. One of the greatest wide sky racist movies of all time, in my opinion, was a movie that came out long, long ago. It is 1984. Ironically, it was produced by it was not written, but it was produced. It was directed by Joe Dante, released by Warner Brothers, and the executive producer was Steven Spielberg. And it was a screenplay written by a man named Christopher Columbus. And there was a time Steven Spielberg wasn't adopting black children back in 84. He was just interested in being another Jew rabbit making lots of money in Hollywood. And they introduced a film that got all kinds of allegations of allegations of racism. Now, sometimes black rabbits see everything as racist. The reason they see everything, not sometimes, they do all the time, they see everything as racist because to them the world is racial, and that is racial. In other words, their schema is the direct opposite of the white rabbit. Their schema is that all things are racial, and that is racial. In other words, everything is based on race, and that is deeply rooted in them. They're the direct opposite of us. We're non-racial, and that is racial, where they are extremely racial, and that is racial. And of course, if you were black, you'd be racially conscious too, because no one in the world really wants to be black. But this movie is called Gremlins. And Gremlins came out long, long ago. I was just a little guy. And the movie, once you start appreciating this stuff, the movie is dangerously and subversively racial. White rabbits do not see things in racial terms, and that is racial. So taking things out of the box, making little animals that become monsters once you play with their nature. That is an extremely fascinating concept, especially to someone like me, because it works. It works at them on a subconscious basis. Now, white rabbits would sit here, even white nationalists or paleoconservatives, argue that the movie is not racial. They argued all day long. Even Steven Spielberg, after all, he's by and large looks white. You know, we don't look like Jews. They look like us. They get a lot of their traits from us. He didn't think it was all that racial, but he had no idea what he was producing. And I'll read you a little bit about this because it goes with my theme, of my environmental theme of leave non-interference, leave them alone. And I'll read you there's a movie website called 50 Most Racist Movies, and this only made 46. I consider this to be number one, basically. Because the type of play, white rabbits will sit and watch this type of thing time and time again, not really realize what it's doing to them on a subconscious basis. The film stars, which spawn from a mystical Asian creature called the Mogwai, are loud, breakdancing little monsters who devour fried chicken at an unprecedented pace, destroy and devalue property, and even kill good white folks. But they're not meant to represent black youths, though. Definitely not. They're not nearly scary enough. But let's talk about some of the criticism that African Americans have said. Some people have criticized Gremlins, and this is on Wikipedia. This is right off of Wiki. Some people have criticized Gremlins as being culturally insensitive, and this was one of the first movies to get heavy-duty criticism because the black rabbit saw exactly what this Columbus character was doing. Some observers had commented that the film represents Gremlins as African-Americans in an unflattering manner. At the time of its release, some members of the African-American community protested that the film was racist. These critics suggested that the creatures exhibit some of the worst stereotypical behavior attributed to blacks: wild, drunken, violent, murderous, seductive, and lascivious. In The Ceramic Uncles and Celluloid Mammies, Patricia Turner writes that gremlins reflect negative African-American stereotypes in their dress and behavior. They are shown devouring fried chicken with their hands, listening to black music, breakdancing, wearing sunglasses after dark with newsboys' caps, and style common among African-American films in the 80s. And Patricia Turner was 100% correct. 100% correct. For white rabbits, for even white rabbits to have a clue that this could be racial, I'd have to remake it, put little afros on the gremlins, and call them nigglins. They don't get it. They don't get it. But they do. They do on a subconscious basis. It is absolutely funny. And I like the movie because the objective of the movie is you have this little creature that's really nice, but you cannot feed it after midnight. You cannot feed it after midnight, and you cannot get it wet, because if you get it wet, it'll artificially multiply. And so water is kind of like a metaphor for Western medicine. If you give the little brown rabbits, the speckly brown rabbits, Western medicine and Western technology, they will artificially multiply. And, of course, if you feed them, you got big problems. Everything escalates out of control. And so, of course, if you get the little Mogwai wet, he artificially multiplies. If you feed them after midnight, they turn into gremlins. And they're running around mowing through fried chicken and talking like black rabbits. It is the best movie of all times, because they'll sit there and watch it time and time again and not even realize what they're watching it. But it happens on a subconscious basis. You'd have to see it. You'd have to really see it and think about what I'm telling you. The movie is fantastic. It's one of the greatest racist movies of all times. And that would probably get some controversy me even saying that. But you'd have to really watch and understand what's going on in The Average White Rabbit. They're not racial, and that is racial. So they're going to watch something like this a lot easier than they're going to watch something that would be way over the top, like maybe even A Birth of a Nation. But this is far more subversive, because in reality, the message in Gremlins is very similar to many of the messages in the famous film The Birth of a Nation, which one of the presidents, I think it was Wilson, called it Lightning for the Brain, or something like that. You'd have to see it. In every cinematography class, they'll have you watch Birth of a Nation. It's about the Klan and whatnot. You'd have to watch it. But if you look at Gremlins and then watch Birth of a Nation, why is it white rabbits will watch one and not the other? cultural proclivities, popular culture, underlying streams in popular culture, probably all of the above. But you can communicate with them time and time again indirectly. But the movie, the Africans had it right. I mean, the thing is just comedy when they start, they start multiplying. They get them wet and they accidentally multiply, and then all of a sudden someone feeds it after midnight and it goes wild and it's just mowing through, totally destroying neighborhoods. It is a great, great movie, an epic film. You'd have to see it and keep in mind what I'm saying, but I like it because it's don't feed the bears. not interference. Don't mess with the Mogwai. Not interference. Don't get them wet. Don't give them Western it's total metaphor for my environmental position. Not interference. Leave those little guys alone. Because they will turn into gremlins, start listening to rap music, and start destroying everything. But it is a great, great movie. Go Rick Gremlins. A movie that most white rabbits will sit there and watch and not realize what they're watching. But the underlying theme is not all that different than A Birth of the Nation. Once you break it down to simplicity, that these little guys can't be managed, they have to be managed, and you gotta watch managing them. Don't get them wet, and don't feed them. this non-interference type policy, which is the policy we have to go to. But the movie is classic. But like I said, for even most white nationalists to think the movie was racial, you would have to put little afros on the gremlins and call them nigglins. Then they may get it. That movie is probably about perfect because it can communicate with them on a mass scale and start putting things on a subconscious basis that's already there and just bring it out in a very unique way. But that's my two cents. What we'll move over to next is one of the scariest movies of all time. And that is the movie Alien. The movie Alien, it's a movie that came out in 79. I didn't see it when it came out. I was way too little. But the movie is, it was probably one of the scariest movies I had ever seen. I've heard a lot of people say this movie was the scariest movie they've ever seen. The movie was outright terror. The movie is funny because it has some stereotypes that are true with white behavior. You have a bunch of white rabbits, a backwater mining colony that goes down on a backwater planet. And they're going out searching for the spacecraft that set off some type of warning signal. And so they go into the spacecraft and they see this gigantic alien pilot sitting piloting, and it looks like he had something that burst out of his chest or something. And so they go through this, and this one white rabbit named Kane comes across this one scene, and they have this huge what looks like a huge valley full of these eggs. Alien rabbit eggs. And so, of course, most of the white rabbits are pretty leery of the eggs. But one of them decides to go see what they're all about. So Kane, a fitting name, goes down to the eggs, and he's checking out the eggs because he's a white rabbit, and white rabbits are incredibly curious, and they'll stick their head in anything. And so he sticks his head right up to this alien egg. What's funny is, this is typical white rabbit behavior. One of the white rabbits did what one white rabbit in every group will do and said, Kane, you probably shouldn't stick your big rabbit head down next to that egg. We don't know what it is. But Kane wasn't really listening, and by the time Kane realized anything, he had a big face sucker on his head. And so they take Kane back. They take Kane back to the ship. And the ship has an automaton, a robot that looks just like a human, and he's of course white. There's a little bit of diversity in the film, in so much that there's a black rabbit. And the automaton, the robot, breaks protocol and lets Kane in with this big infection on his face, this big face sucker alien. And of course they put him in the med lab and they put him in quarantine. And the film is full of classic White Rabbit behavior, actually, especially when regards to exploring the ship, which is kind of crazy, and especially in regards to sticking your head down next to an egg, which one White Rabbit will always do, especially in regards to one White Rabbit saying, you know what, maybe you shouldn't do that. It reminds me of some of these stories when White Rabbits first came to America. One White Rabbit in every group would say, you know, those Indians look a little dangerous, and a couple White Rabbits would say, nah, they'll be nice, they'll be just like us, but they're just like a White Rabbits, but painted red. They went over and got skinned alive. Sometimes they would become friends, but sometimes they'd be skinned alive or put on, or the Indians would smoke them in a peace pipe. But anyways, so they bring this alien into the ship, and of course, this infected, Kane has an infection, so they put him in the med lab. And as they put him in the med lab, the alien egg hatches. The face sucker alien detaches from his face and crawls away. And of course, the movie goes on, and the film is outright terrifying the first time you see it. At least to me it was. I mean, it is terrifying. And Ridley Scott can really make a terrifying film when he has his stuff together. But, you know, it is an extremely interesting film for one particular reason. It was made in 1979, and they were starting to really go over the top with the Odyssey 2001s and all the different alien stuff. They've been doing this post-World War II big time. Overwhelming amount of alien stuff. But this was one of the first great films of making an alien absolutely terrifying, at least to me. It was one of the most terrifying alien films of all time. And you know, the movie could be perfect. Yeah, if they would have taken the Black Rabbit, and they would have made the Black Rabbit the automaton, the robot. The robot was black, and the black robot was late for a shift, and the infected crew member was accidentally let in because he was late for a shift or he forgot protocol, then it would be perfect. It would be perfect because it would be full of accurate stereotypes. But we can't make a perfect movie yet. No, the Black Rabbit actually gets killed in the movie and is pretty inconsequential, but by and large, the freaky thing about the movie, the thing that always flipped me out about the movie is when I've seen it over the past few years, is if you look at the med lab has this computer system called Mother. And there's many scenes of the automaton talking to Mother about this alien species and how aggressive it is. And this species is aggressive. It is extremely pure and extremely aggressive. It's a perfect predator, a perfect killing machine. And he's asking Mother all about this species and everything else. And one of the fascinating things about it is if you watch the movie slow, you're going to look above the computer in the med labs is the Sumerian flight symbol. The Sumerian flight symbol right off Sumerian cuneiforms. Yeah, right out of Babylon. If you look at the Sumerian flight symbol, the actual flight symbol is right out of the cuneiforms for the Sumerian flight crews. This goes back to ancient Babylon. That symbol is right there. That was one of the craziest things about the movie. Now, Ridley Scott has obviously read a great deal, or someone that wrote that movie has read a great deal about the Sumerian text. Maybe even more than we know about, but I thought that was a wild thing that they threw in there. And maybe they didn't just throw it in there. Who knows? Because one of the Sumerians, it's been a hot debate, one of the Sumerian texts that isn't, we don't know about fully, but we know elements of it, because elements of it are quite famous. It's about a backwater mining colony from the Sumerian civilization that comes out and comes into the solar system that we're in. And that backwater mining colony has some challenges. And a serpent gets loose in the garden. And that's what's freaky about it. Now, do I think it actually happened? No way. I think they're just putting stuff in there. But it's kind of become a hot debate on how they're throwing these symbols around in 1979. And no one realized it until maybe in the last 10 years. In the last 5 years. I didn't realize it until the last few years. I saw that and I said, wait a minute. Those are Sumerian flight wings. What are they trying to say here? We got Kane infected. Oh, no. It's funny stuff. One of the craziest things about it, though, is Ridley Scott is going back and he's making another movie about the space jockey, this gigantic pilot that becomes a mystery. You have this gigantic pilot in the beginning of the movie when they go into he's a fossilized space jockey, and he has a big hole where an alien came out of his chest. And they're making a movie about going back in time in Alien, they go back in time to talk to the space jockey. Because this creature, apparently the space jockey belonged to a particular race. They look kind of humanoid. They have bodies of a humanoid and the head kind of like an elephant, the head with tentacles, at least in the comic book series. This species actually made this alien as a bioweapon. This species was in a gigantic war with another alien species and made the xenomorph, made this bioweapon that hatches from eggs. And what they actually were walking in the first aliens, apparently, was a bomber. And this bomber would come over a civilization and it would bomb the civilization with the eggs from those aliens. Those eggs would be that was an actual bombing bay that they were walking with, all those eggs. And it would drop those eggs on an unsuspecting planet. And these, of course, the xenomorphs would go to town and clear the planet out. And that's how they were waging war. And, you know, they got in trouble in a war and created a bioweapon. Well, this bioweapon turned around and exterminated them. They ended up getting affected, this particular alien species, and this xenomorph ended up killing them. It was such a perfect species that they created. I think that's pretty bizarre, pretty wild stuff. I don't know how they just dream this stuff up, but you know, white rabbits can dream up anything. All you do is put a few dangerous thoughts in their heads. But there are all kinds of different topics going way back that are threaded in there. But I think this would probably be an interesting movie. It's supposed to be released next year. Well, you could only imagine how much we'd be hated if we had little Jew rabbit eggs and we went on unsuspecting planet and we dropped eggs full of Jew rabbits. Oh my goodness! No wonder they were at war. Imagine how much the white rabbits would be hated. No, but seriously, it's an interesting series. The series went way off track, but the original director, Ridley Scott, is doing the one on the particular big pilot that becomes a mystery. You know, who's this pilot? What's that spacecraft? How did these things get out of there? How did these things get in there? Well, it's a biodesigned weapon, a xenomorph that they designed for war. And it was so perfect it ended up killing them as well. And they end up getting affected and getting killed. But it is a fascinating movie. And I could sit here all day long and talk about space movies and different concepts having to do with Mars. You've seen all kinds of different concepts about life in Mars, or that you can actually exist on Mars, or that there's a face on Mars that gives off some signal to an alien planet. They're just pummeling this stuff down our throats about alien invasions, and all different other topics. But that's going to be the end of the first edition of the Horace Goes to the Movies. And now I've laid some groundwork, and since I've laid some groundwork, I'll come back to it, and I'll do more and more of this stuff, because it's easy for me to do, and you can do hours and hours of it. And movies can be a very, very big deal to white rabbits for one simple reason. We invented them. You know, things are always going to affect us more when we invent them. Yeah, if you invent the modern media, obviously it can probably have a much more devastating effect, and a much more creative and a constructive effect as well. If we made it, obviously it's going to affect us more than everybody else. But that's an overview. So in closing, I'll probably come back and do some more movie stuff in future episodes, because it's something fun to do and I can do it all day long and talk about all kinds of different angles on things and different ideals are putting in your heads one way, shape, manner, or form. And with white rabbits, taking a direct approach can work at times, but sometimes the indirect is best. Sometimes using little animals to communicate a message that eats at them subconsciously. Sometimes that stuff works better. But right now on the planet, for the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, not a lot makes sense. In this particular podcast, we went over a situation with Russian so-called spies that weren't charged with spying. That kind of doesn't make sense. A network of Russian spies. That in itself doesn't make any sense. And of course, at the beginning of this broadcast, even on the first MP3, the first handful of MP3s, I talked about a situation that doesn't make sense. We have the whole top of the planet, but we don't have a home. That don't make sense. Someone's tried to kill their founding gene pool. That don't make no sense. And so the Russian spy scandal is just another case of something not making no sense. Nothing makes any sense anymore. and we're trying to make sense of things, and we're moving right along here. One thing that's important about the Russian-American axis that's coming into fruition. Yeah, you got a Russian-German-Italian axis that's been talked about. Now you got the Russians meeting with elements in America. You know, starting in September 2009, if you look at the agenda, they've been meeting with the Secretary of State nonstop, and then post September 2009, every element that means anything is meeting together. You know, if you have Russia, if you don't have Russia, you don't have a new world order. If you don't have America, you don't have a new world order. You can't do anything. You got to have them both. Either wide sky or what you see is what you get. If you have some combination of wide sky and what you see is what you get, you have both of them, you have a new world order. You know, the new rabbits, the pink rabbits, Team Pink Rabbit, they don't have a new world order. And that's what's kind of dangerous. I think these idiots are just now starting to realize that. At least the lower level ones, or maybe they've been split up and sold out piecemeal. Maybe Pootie Poot's going to do another number on Hillary. I have no idea. Well, stay tuned, because none of this stuff makes any sense, right? Just like having the whole top of the planet not having a home. That doesn't make any sense. But we'll continue to investigate this. Right now, the big thing on the spy candle will be this Anna Chapman. You'll see her all over the place. And she's nice to see. She's easy on the eyes, this redhead. What's interesting about her is she's a UK citizen. She married into the UK. She married some boy from the United Kingdom. And so the MI5 will be all over the place. MI5 is, of course, like a UK CIA. Very good at what they do. I think they've been compromised by multiculturalism and multiracialism. They're not near what they were, but they will be all over the place. It's kind of your job when one of your citizens turns out to be a spy or turns out to be have all these connections. You know, her father was supposedly KGB, and we'll see them all over the place on this one. They're going to be investigating everything under the sun because they've had a big Russian problem. Yeah, the United Kingdom and Team Pink Rabbit, all the elements of Team Pink Rabbit have had this Russian problem, and this Russian problem just gets bigger. It gets bigger, and the bigger it gets, the more it don't make no sense. But things in the end will make sense. That's one thing I can guarantee you. And one thing we can always do, we can always be on a consistent message, because it's legal. We can do it night and day, and we can do it and make a difference. We can always make a difference with a consistent message, because that's where everything begins. It begins with that sound and that vibration. And before I forget, we can make a difference with a consistent image. Sure, maybe you need a man. You're going to the bar tonight, and you need yourself a nice white jackrabbit. Well, wear that T-shirt. Buy that T-shirt. You may be surprised in how one jumps in your lap. Maybe you're trying to get your wife to cook you dinner. Well, you buy that T-shirt. Put it up a flagpole. Next thing you know, dinner's coming. It's a magic T-shirt. It's the only thing on the planet that symbolizes white rabbit genocide. And that makes it magical. It makes it special. So there's a shameless plug on buying a T-shirt. Get those eyes. Everyone will be asking about it. Get the T-shirt everyone will want. And you may be the only one in the area that has one, because you've been wise enough to buy one. But that's about the only thing we can do. We can stick to our basics, and I will pontificate on everything else for you, or at least try to, as these things keep making no sense. But in the end, something will make sense. When things like this start happening over and over again, the Green Goddess, our Godzilla, serves us. Well, you'd probably be mind-numbing. It'll probably drop most to the floor. It'll be earth-shattering. And then things will start making sense all at once. And then you need to just hold on for the ride. Hold on for the ride, as they say. And Obama, he's making sense. Yeah, he's someone making sense. He's eating cheeseburgers. He's making a whole lot of sense. In the next Follow the White Rabbit, we're going to try to make some sense out of something that most white rabbits can't make no sense out of. And that's why we're always trying to save stuff. we're going back into white rabbit psychology and ecology. We're going to talk about our ability to abide the law, even when the law is broke and it's trying to kill us. And we're going to talk about our ever-ending need to save stuff. And we're going to go back into white rabbit psychology and ecology. I'm going to talk about some stuff again from a different angle. I've talked about this stuff before, but I'm going to hit at it from a different angle. And then we're going to talk about the origin of our enemies. I'm going to read from you from Bankster's From Here to Babylon. I'm going to talk about the origin of Team Pink Rabbit, at least elements of it. Very interesting stuff. And we may do some more movie stuff. I may hit some question and answers because I get to ask questions quite a bit, and I haven't done that in a while. But I'll be back with you in the next file of the White Rabbit, and I believe that would be 47. But by all means, get yourself a T-shirt and be on message. At least aware that there's one to listen for, there's one to be on. And we'll be back with you again here shortly. We are now at the end of another episode of Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horus the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening. So